Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. I didn't finish rearranging my desk yet. This is crazy today. There's so much going on that, you know, it's amazing. Who would have thought that after a coup and the installation of a dictatorship run by mandates that we'd have so many things to talk about? I mean, it's really quite fascinating to me that, my biggest problem is what to do. It's a big selection process. But what I do like to do that I think makes this show special amongst the many things that make it special, of course, the most important thing are the people involved. That's what really makes this show special. But what I think that we do that no one else seems to do is we take a story and we just run with it. And we may run with it for weeks, months, years, you know, but at least, during the course of a show, I want to take the time to really explore an issue well. And so that, you know, each show is like a complete unit. I mean, they're sequential. They all build on each other. But each show in itself is a complete unit. So when I have folks that, that come in and guests that go off on tangents and things, I really like to bring them back, or even my regular callers, who I'm guilty of saying, hold it, wait a minute, I need to get this on this particular show. That's why I do it. Okay, so today is going to be we're going to talk a lot. I've got a ton of news stories, but in fact, I just sent Gene something that you're all going to want to look at when you can, which is the Phillips Exeter Academy website. And the reason is because I want to show you what they do compared to what's going on. Because we have a two-tier society. We have the elites and we have everybody else. And unfortunately, I'm still with everybody else, although I think I want to merge with the elites and see what I can do to sort of infiltrate their operation. But there was a time not so long ago, it was a year ago, year and a bit, during the spring of the great COVID lockdown, the pandemic that wasn't, the situation where you had all this stuff going on and the lockdowns, the mask, everything else. And there's no reason for any of it. You know, COVID, as we reported March 2nd, 2020, I keep going back to that. We said that chloroquine cures COVID. There is no pandemic. We said it. We stuck by it. We were the first to say it. You know, the first, as far as I can tell in the country, I think Laura Ingraham, came like a couple of weeks later. But we said it first. We stood by it. And away we go. And so that's where we stood. And I thought at that point, I'm looking at the schools. I'm looking at the fact that they closed, the fact all the kids are home, they're all on Zoom learning and independent learning and online learning and things like that. And the greatest benefit of that, of course, is that the parents actually saw what the kids were learning in school. Why they didn't know before, I'm not quite sure, but they didn't. And then they found out what the kids were learning. And now, of course, parents are trying to replace all the Marxists on the school boards with, real Americans. And so there's this fascinating dynamic that's going on. But at the time, I said, you people are fighting a huge entrenched bureaucracy that combines not only bureaucratic Marxists, but, complete and total fascists on the school unions that want absolute control over everything. And the last thing that either the school boards or the school unions, the teachers' unions care about are the students. I mean, they're last on the list. They don't care. The teachers' unions care about money, So as I understand it, teachers were being paid not to teach. They were doing Zoom learning and online and all that kind of stuff, but they were basically paid not to teach to empty classrooms. And of course, they probably weren't even there themselves. And they said, well, this is about safety. Safety? Whenever you hear the word safety, you should just immediately, the bells, whistles should go off, the red flags should start waving. You have to say to yourself, well, whose safety are we talking about here? Is it the teacher safety, or is it the teacher salary safety, or is it the union safety? Are they in fact very powerful, or so powerful in fact that they can dictate to the CDC, which they did, what the school policy should be, and this whole thing. So I thought that the solution is, it's like fight or run. You've got a choice. You can fight or you can escape. In California, I chose to escape because the fight would have been worthless. There are too many of them, not enough of me. And although there were a few of me, I remember a group of 12 conservatives in the San Francisco Bay Area, for as far as we were concerned, we were it. So these are impossible odds. The best advocacy, the best arguments, the best, knowledge in the world will not help you against the massive morons who are totally socialist duped. It just won't. So at that point, the job was to escape. Here, the job in Milton, Florida, near Pensacola and the panhandle of Florida, the job is to fight. because I've got you know, kindred spirits everywhere. I've got an entire county and community and at least the panhandle part of the state that's conservative, that's American, that's patriotic, that's independent, that's libertarian, that's all kinds of different things, but they are all basically for individual freedom, as opposed to the Marxist states that are for groupthink and group power. And so I thought at that point in the spring of 2020 that the best thing we could do was to escape from the government-controlled indoctrination centers known as public schools, and that the sooner we did that, the better. And I even had a friend of mine say to me, I thought you were crazy when you said that. You can't get rid of the public schools. Public schools, that's part of America. That's what we are. That's who we are. We had government. I went to a public school and I turned out just fine. And I said, compared to what? I mean, how do you know? How do you know? If you've never been to a private school, and I've been to both. I went to a wonderful private school in Australia that exceeded every American public school I ever went to by orders of magnitude. You cannot beat a private education. You can't, because they're actually concerned with education. And if the teachers don't perform, they get fired. Okay. So we have a system of government indoctrination and elitist training schools. That's what we've broken down to in this country. So I wrote this actually last night for my Facebook promo for the show this morning. And Gene, I'll get you in just a minute. I want to bring you into this, but I want to sort of lay the groundwork for what we're going to do, lay the groundwork as part of this. I want to get everybody thinking kind of in these terms so that you understand where I don't just make, the huge statements that I make taken out of context will make absolutely no sense to you. But if we lay the foundations, then hopefully they will. So because of the censorship of Facebook and because of the fact that I got some query notice that caused me to go, uh-oh, maybe I shouldn't say this, I better stay on the show instead. I wrote something. I'll just read it to you. I said, the first great opportunity, this is about ending government indoctrination of the 99% of us. The first great opportunity was when the socialist indoctrination centers known as public schools closed their doors during the great lockdown of 2020. That's when I advocated for weeks that they be permanently closed, that the school buildings be sold to private school owners, and a national private school system funded by education vouchers to parents only, no money to any government entity, would be the new system. The reason this is the second great opportunity we're talking about now, the reason this is the second great opportunity now is because Biden and his Praetorian Guard General Merrick Garland at the Department of Justice, there's a misnamed title if ever there was, have decided that parents who publicly speak against, CRT, basically communist race theory, and mass communism are in fact domestic terrorists and have no authority over their own kids or the government indoctrination centers we all pay for. This has to change now. So that was the promo I was going to write. And I thought to myself, you know what? This is going to get kicked out. This is going to get me banned, and then they won't have access to people, and they won't have access to our ideas here at Action Radio. So rather than do that, I wrote that here. But the situation, the first great opportunity was in the spring of 2020 during the bogus COVID lockdown to just end public schools, sell their buildings, fire the teachers. This would also have the effect of destroying the teachers' union, which is a government union, because the private schools are not going to take, they're not going to tolerate a government union. And I'm all for private unions. If the teachers wanted to reunionize under private schools, yeah, good luck to you. I mean, listen, it's free association. People can do that. You want to beat people through competition, not through oppression. All right. Even if I disagree with the motives, and I'm very pro-union. I was a Teamster for years. Okay, so it's not like I don't know what I'm talking about. So the next great opportunity is right now. All right. This is a huge opportunity to end government oppressive indoctrination centers in every community, in every neighborhood, in every city, county, town, state in this country. End it now. End government indoctrination now. And the reason you have to end it now is because, Marxist Biden and his coup. It was Blinken, Anthony Blinken. I guess is he Secretary of State or National Security Advisor? I forget. It doesn't matter. He's not qualified for either one. But he used the word democracy in relationship to the United States. And like, you hypocrite, let's just add this to the charges. How can any of these people refer to us as a democracy? First of all, we're a republic. And that's a whole other argument I've made before. But how can any of these people refer to anybody who's in the Biden coup, a tyrannical usurpation of our entire federal government by people that stole the election? And then he uses the word democracy. And in the same breath, they talk about mandates. This is a government by mandate. Well, governments by mandates are not democracies. Governments by mandates are dictatorships. This is why I said we have so much information to talk about. And the Praetorian Guard was the guard under Caesar that was both an army personal guard and a secret police force. So when you hear the term Praetorian Guard, that's what we're talking about here. So General, now I wouldn't say Attorney General, but General Merrick Garland of the Praetorian Guard of Joe Biden, the usurper, you know, wants to go after parents, any parents that speak out against school boards. Why? Because they want the Marxists to remain on the school boards. Why? Because they want the power and control. Why? Because they want to keep indoctrinating your kids and have a two-class society, 99% subservient, 1% elites. Man, I don't know the exact percentages, but you get the idea. And so then I thought, okay, well, let's see where the elites go to school. And this is where the show's going to get really fun, okay? Because after we go through some of the articles, these very dangerous and disgusting articles about how they are doing that, I thought to myself, well, let's take a look and see how the how do the elites go to school? So I looked them up. Okay, we'll get to this a little bit after, certainly after I talked to Gene. And I went through their academic programs. We're going to do that here too. And the first thing I noticed that just glaringly just leapt out at me, there isn't a single picture of a student with a mask at Phillips Exeter Academy. Not one. There is no section in the Phillips Exeter Academy. This is like the most prestigious prep school in the country. Okay, they've been around since the 1600s. They've got a $1 billion endowment. The richest of the rich, the most powerful of the powerful, that's where they send their kids to school. This is one of the five places. Phillips Exeter Academy. Look it up. I'll give you the website right now. I mean, this is too cool to miss, because this is what is real fun with this. You know, www.exeter.edu. They don't have to even put Phillips Exeter Academy. They can just put Exeter. Everybody knows what it is. It's that powerful. All right. So look that up, and we're going to peruse the academic section, and you're just going to die laughing. And you're going to realize, huh. Well, of course, then my next crusade is, what if we put that in our education system? What if we take that to the Santa Rosa School Board and say, we want this academic program. If it's good enough for them, it's good enough for us. Equal protection of the laws. Why should they have something that we don't have? I mean, where's your equity? Okay, so we're going to throw the Marxism right back in the Marxist face. We want equity with Phillips Exeter Academy. We don't have equity right now. We want social justice. Why should they have an education that we don't have? You know, despite the fact that it costs $50,000, well, obviously they're not being taxed enough. I mean, I can throw the arguments right back in their face just as well as they can, you know, make up bogus arguments and throw them in my face. So the fact that you have, you know, Biden the usurper and the Praetorian Guard General Merrick Garland out to arrest parents like they arrested the Capitol Hill walk-in visitors, you know, on January 6th and made them political prisoners, they want to make political prisoners of parents. And if you don't think this is a gulag country under a dictatorship, then you are sadly mistaken. You are not walking around with your eyes open. You do not know what's going on. You know, so if you're hiding behind a mask thinking that that's going to allow you to be safe, look at Senator Sinema, who was chased by an illegal alien. First of all, why doesn't she have a bodyguard? Why doesn't she have security? But how the hell did an illegal alien make national news, should have been immediately arrested and deported, chasing a U.S. senator into a stall in a ladies' room, and she's yelling at her from outside? Why wasn't that woman arrested and deported immediately? So that's the country we live in. And Biden says, well, that's just the political process. Well, I can do the political process too. I can hang outside their house. I can put together a security team to dox them. I can do anything they can do. I just need more listeners, more power, more money. Trust me. Let's do it. But at least I hope that I'm going to operate by consensus and allow people, you know, to – I don't want power. I want to take away power. Take away power from them. Anyway, that's what we're going to talk about today. Gene, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Your reaction. Feel free.
Well, there's a lot, and too bad I don't remember all the names, but Kyrsten Sinema, did you see that yesterday where she also got heckled on a plane?
No. Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Continues. And they're okay with that, you know, because Biden allows it. He said, oh, well, because you work for the government, you should expect it. No, you should not expect that, because on January 6th, there was no insurrection, even though every Democrat almost on the planet says there is. And some, well, I was going to say Republicans, they're really, we know they're not Republicans. But then you have people actually heckling her, going up to her. How do you know they don't have a gun? How do you know they couldn't physically hurt her? And they just go up to her, and that is not right. That's the insurrection. There is an insurrection, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, and I don't know her name. I didn't get her name, but I saw the person that was testifying. I don't know if it was before Congress or Senate yesterday, talking about whoever, I don't even know where in the country it was asked that the National Guard be sent out and all that stuff, whatever, for these school boards. And this person, this administration just shows. Every person they hire, I always thought when you work for the government, and especially the president, it is the best of the best. It's like I think it's right now, what we're seeing, every person that works for Biden is like the worst of the worst. And they can't even answer a question coherently. They can't, like that lady, what she said, it was like, oh my God. I'm so guilty. Who was it? Josh Hartley? He was the one questioning her that I watched. And thank God he said something, because he wants to know who is it now, this Attorney General come and talk? I think that's who
Merrick
it is.
Garland. Yeah.
Yes. And not that he's going to come and say anything, any give any truthful answers either. But this is ridiculous. Parents, primary caregivers of children that are going to school have a right to demand what their children are reading. I mean, did you hear some of the stuff kids, the library books that are in these schools? I'm sorry, but when some of these children's books cannot be on the shelves because of just how it's sexist, how, because years ago when we met, I read Dick and Jane. Oh, God, those you can't read anymore. But you can read stuff about, fifth graders can read stuff about oral sex and all this other stuff. Are you kidding me? It's like, it's one thing if the parent is like, oh, yeah, go for it. But when you go in there and you think that these kids are being, you know, have access to, well, I was going to say learning materials. I guess that's a learning material. But are you kidding me? It's like for that age, what is the reason for that? And why are they doing it in the school? I mean, allowing it in the school without the parent being at least a little bit aware, just a little bit even.
They don't care. They don't want parents aware.
I just think it's ridiculous. And then, you know, you see these teachers and that one that was so afraid of the American flag and it scared her. I'm like, you know what? If the American flag scares you, one, get out of the country, and two, you should not be teaching little kids, because if a flag scares you, what are you going to do if a kid brings in a spider or something like that? Are you going to flip out? It's like, I just don't get it. But I'm glad people continue to speak up. Hallelujah. Thank you. And, yeah. And then later on, I want to talk about, I heard Patrick D. Hampton talk yesterday about his brother that was at Erlanger in Chattanooga with COVID. Oh, my God.
Why don't you talk about that now? Let's change the subject for a bit. Why don't you go with that right now? And then, because I don't know anything about this.
I don't know. Okay. I'll tell you. Marlon's brother was, him and his wife both had COVID. They went to a clinic. His wife, I think, was given, I forget what she was given. She was given something, but he was not, because his oxygen was already at 88%. Well, at 88% walking in, I mean, 88% is when you work with anybody. That's the low normal. You don't really want it any lower than that. Some people do get lower than that. But anyway, make a long story short, he was taken to Erlanger Hospital, admitted. And all they wanted to do was put him on a ventilator and give him remdesivir.
Oh, well, that's a death sentence.
One day, I don't know if it was the first day, second day, whatever it was, but his brother, him and Patrick told him, whenever a doctor comes in, you FaceTime me. Well, he did. Well, his brother did break down and get one dose of remdesivir, but Patrick was like, no more. And so this person refused it, and he refused to be put on a ventilator. And so, make a long story short, they asked for ivermectin. Nope, couldn't have it. Couldn't have vitamin C. Couldn't have, you know. And so then they're like, well, we want to take him home. Another doctor. Get this. Could not get another doctor. Are you kidding me? It's like,
no, this
when
is what's
you're in
going
hospital,
on. This
when
is,
you're
this
anywhere,
is.
Your right is to get a different doctor. I'm sorry. But the doctor in charge of him, and I think it could have been, and I can't remember, but I think it was the doctor in charge of the hospital, Erlanger, came in there, and they basically said no. And then the brothers, like Patrick said, Let us take him home. Let us take him home. Nope, he's going to die. He's going to die. He won't make it to the elevator. It was such, the whole story is a travesty. So then they finally get him home. Ambulance takes him home. And the only way they could get home is by hospice. Hospice following him. Well, they get home from, and I know wonderful hospice companies. I don't know what happened, but this is number two, very big concern, that they could not choose the hospice company. That is illegal. You have a right to choose your hospice, your home health company. So that was another red flag. Well, anyway, it was the hospice that, I don't know if it worked through Erlanger, but Erlanger sent this hospital company out. Well, they get out, no nurse there, no nurse to help this guy get his equipment settled in. That's another horrible thing. Well, he had two oxygen tanks. The cylinder that the hospice company sent out was empty. It's like, are you kidding me? Number one, if they're paying for an oxygen tank, how the heck would you send one out that was empty when there's tags on it to know, like when you start the oxygen tank, and I don't do respiratory, but I dealt with oxygen tanks before. I'm not a respiratory therapist, so this is my little peon knowledge that I have. But when you switch over an oxygen tank, there is a plastic seal on it that you have to take off before it can be used. So obviously there was some mess up there. But he had two, I think the way it sounds, two wall units, which you put it in a wall unit, and then you just, the oxygen comes through, you know, through that way. Well, one of them was broken. And so this was new equipment or just equipment he had just gotten. So anyway, then they finally got things taken care of. The hospice, someone from, I don't know if it's hospice through that company or someone else came out to fix the tanks, whatever they did, they hooked him up to the one that didn't work and left. So the guy's oxygen level continued to go down. So by the time Patrick and his family figured out what was going on, it took a while. I'm like, how, I mean, are these people, I mean, where are you getting your license? But then they finally got the, I don't know if it was the head of the company, I forget, but a hospice nurse came out then the next day or whenever they came out. She came out, one of the first things she did was turn his oxygen down 5, like if he was on 20, he was on 20, they turn him down to 15.
What?
And it's like, why? Oh, the hospice doctor said so. They could not get the hospice doctor on the line. They could not, and they continued to watch this guy's oxygen go down into the 60s. Well, she turned it up 2 degrees or 2 notches, so it got into the 80s. But I am like, we need to speak up. We need to say, this is not right. I mean, this guy is still fighting for his life, but he's home. They got him a different company to manage his hospice care because that was the only way he could go home. They want to try to get someone that can get him, I think it's vitamin C, vitamins through intravenously, and they're having a hard time. They're not able to do that at this point. But I'm like, okay, Erlanger, they could give him ivermectin because that's not on their protocol. Only remdesivir is and ventilators. When you know
both of which are deadly.
People put on remdesivir is usually dead within a week.
Yeah,
and another thing, they don't feed these people right away because what? Then they're put on their remdesivir, and then that messes up, what is it, the kidneys? And then forget it. It's really a downward spiral. So my thinking is if on the NIH, their website, supposedly according to these guys, if remdesivir is number one and the ivermectin is number two, but these hospitals are not allowing number two, we need to speak up. We need to get quick federal funding for these hospitals. Because I used to live in Chattanooga, so I know Erlanger well as far as it's a county hospital, but they get tons of money. And what speaks volumes is if you're put on, if you're diagnosed with COVID, regardless of what you're given, like in Chattanooga, and I didn't realize it was different depending where you live, they get over, I don't know if it was 166, I can't remember what the number was because I didn't write it down. It was like after one last night when I was listening to this. But it was per patient just to have that diagnosis. So what they're saying is some people aren't even being tested when they go into the hospital to see if they have COVID. They're just put that they have COVID. Well, obviously this guy did. But one, this family needs prayers. And if anybody can help this family, please get in touch with them because what they are going through, this is basically telling you that Marlon's life, according to Erlanger and according to that first home health company, doesn't matter. And what is the tragedy of that? Because you know what? If he's living at home, look at how little that cost is compared to if he would have been an Erlanger on a vent. And who's to say? He may unfortunately still die, or he may have died during the night. I have not heard anymore. But we need to start speaking up. We need to say, this is unacceptable. I mean, these hospitals are doing what they're doing, and if he would have been put on a bed, he probably would be dead by now. I mean, we don't know. I can't speculate. But that's the course of action. When you're put on remdesivir in a vent, it's not a good ending for most of the people. I think, what is it, 50-some percent of people, maybe even higher, die. I mean, that is horrible. Why can't they do the ivermectin when it's such a huge difference, like what we talked about?
Well, let's talk about that.
Why can't they?
I'll let you answer that question. Why can't they use ivermectin? Yeah,
They won't. They won't even give a reason. They just said, no, we can't do it here. They won't do it there.
What do you think the reason is?
Well, you want to know why? Because they want people on the remdesivir. They want people on the vents. And their reasoning could be different than Dr. Fauci. But Dr. Fauci, every person that dies of COVID, I don't care if you're in the hospital or not, that should be put on Fauci. Because he's the one that's not allowing people to get the treatments they need. And you can say, oh, that's not true. Yes, it is true. Because look how many doctors would say, oh, yes, you could use ivermectin. And then what happens? Oh, no, we can't do it here. Or even people in the general public, we can't get it anymore. Or it's very difficult to get. So it doesn't work for one person. You know what? Did you try it? Something that costs a dollar or two to give. What's the harm? Because the thing is, if it worked, look at the benefits.
Well, you don't want to just try things. You don't want to just try things arbitrarily. I mean, and you talked about this before.
Throwing it out of your hat and saying, oh, we're going to try this. No.
Yeah.
But what's remdesivir? That's not just trying something. To me, that's more of a try. Because you know what's going to happen.
What I'm saying is that you want to make sure that you do the research first. So you're not just trying something. I don't want to get the impression that that we're just trying. Well, let's try this and see if it works. No, that's not true. Because what we're doing is we're trying things that we already know work from past experience, past studies, and everything else like that. So we're not trying them for the sake of saying if it does work. We're saying that the original doctors that like Dr. Zelenko and Dr. Raoult that discovered these things. I mean, a lot of the best things are really discovered by accident. They do try. They do the research. They think, well, this compound has cured, SARS-CoV-1. Let's try it on SARS-CoV-2. It's probably going to work. In fact, it does. And so both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine fall into that category. So that's when we say try something. I mean, that's what I mean. When I say we're going to try something, we're not experimenting in that case. And if we are, I'm going to let you know. But the reason I wanted to get to this is because the question, two big questions for you. The first one question is, so it's more of a statement I want you to comment on. Death is more profitable than life right now. The way the guidelines are set up, the way the hospitals make money, the way the CDC, Dr. Fascist, Big Pharma, the Biden insurrection and coup, the dictatorship, the mandates, all these things going all the way through, both Pfizer and Moderna, I think, are making $60 billion this year, all right, just from the vaccine, messenger RNA shot. So COVID, giving out COVID, which is what the vaccine does, it actually gives you COVID. It teaches your body how to make spike proteins, and the spike proteins are COVID, every bit as much as the virus. Okay, so they're actually giving it to you. So it's the perfect marketing campaign if you have no conscience, if you're a total psychopath, and these people obviously are. But the question is why are we allowing death to be more profitable than life? Why is it that a hospital, a place we used to go with the confidence that they would do the best they could to make us better, is now becoming a death chamber, is now becoming an execution institution where death has become more profitable than life, where they know, everybody knows that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine works, but that's not the point. They want to hide it because they want the money. Where did this culture of death come from where we're allowing hospitals to keep people? And what kind of laws are involved here? And why aren't the police saying, you people, why can't you call the police on the hospital and saying, you have kidnapped this person. You have restrained them. You've given, treatments that we know don't work. And yet you're seizing their body. And we have amendments against seizures of persons.
Yes. And in Patrick's case, he actually called, I don't know if it was the police, sheriff, whoever he called to try to see what they could do to help him get his brother out of the hospital. And their arms are pretty much tied.
No, they're not. Well, the county sheriff can do it. County sheriffs can do it, but they're not.
So it's just thing, really sad. But no, yeah. Isn't it awful that you can't even make a decision over your own treatment? Because, Greg, the bottom line is, God forbid, if they would have said, no, we don't want him on the remdesivir, we don't want him on a ventilator, and the guy died, tragic. But the thing is, it was the family's decision.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the hospital telling them what to do. It's totally their best interest when we know it's not. It's not in the family's best interest or the person's best interest.
Well, that's the difference between, you know, persuasion through information and mandates. If something is mandated, chances are it's not going to be good for you. If vaccines are mandated, it's not going to work out. It's like, you know, World War II versus Vietnam. When in World War II, they had enough volunteers because the cause was just. It was our national defense, and we had to end, you know, fascism, Nazism, and the Emperor of Japan, you know, trying to dominate the world. Okay, so that was a good cause, all right? But Vietnam, they had to have a draft because it wasn't a good cause, and people didn't want to go. It's very simple. So look for the – if you have a mandate, okay, you don't have mandates in a free society. People have the ability to make their own decisions, and they may make wrong decisions, but people have the right to make wrong decisions, you know, unless it involves kids and stuff, and we'll get into that kind of stuff later. But the point is that if the family – if the hospital is doing – the right thing, and they are convincing the family of what is the right thing, and the family says, okay, yeah, I believe you guys. This seems like a good treatment. Something still may go wrong because nothing's perfect in this world, but at least the family had the decision and the option. If they are mandating, if they are stealing a body, if they are stealing people's bodies for the purpose of basically killing them with COVID treatments that don't work but make a huge profit, then the industry, then the hospitals have become death centers, all right? So let's get back to the original question I started with when it comes to education. Fight or escape? Do you fight the system or do you escape it? What do you think is the best? I'll say what I think in a second. Fight or escape, as far as the hospitals go. Your point?
At this point, I'd almost think you need to escape because you can't really fight. The reason I say you can't really fight when time is of the essence, because once they get your loved one in there, mm-hmm. I've heard stories where they don't let them out. Well, you know, the person in Chicago that had all that money recently that died, that lady. I mean, how sad is that?
Well, she was a protester. She was an insurrectionist. It was okay to kill her. I'm being sarcastic.
I think that you don't have the time to fight. I think you need to act fast. And you have to do what you feel is best and no second guessing and no after the fact. You know, getting angry with yourself for what you did. You do the best you can with the information you have. And who knows? Like, if someone, like, even in this family's case, they still don't know if their loved one is going to live or die. But I would think he has a better chance at home. Well, he did now that he has hospice company. Can you imagine? I mean, getting sent equipment that doesn't work and is empty? I mean, are you kidding me?
Well, I mean, this is part of the sabotage. This is saying that if you don't let us keep you, we're going to kill you anyway, because death is more profitable. You know. So here's a question for anybody that wants to try and answer it, 215-383-3832. And you can always write me at greg@writeyourlaws.com. You know, the hospitals were making about $1,000 for listing a death as COVID, regardless of what it was, motorcycle injury, murder, didn't matter. If you had a COVID test, or even if if you're remotely connected to COVID in any particular way, they were listing your death as COVID, even if you had flu, because they can't tell the difference in the tests. So the question is, if they're making $30,000 for simply listing a death as COVID, how much money are they making for actually causing a death and listing it as COVID? There's got to be money in this. It's the only reason that they're doing it, because they're psychopaths. They're death centers. The hospitals have become death centers. That's the problem. I don't know the answer. I don't know how much they're making. Let me take a look at live chat. Anybody wants to get involved with live chat? We'll see. Yeah. We don't have anybody yet.
Lumberjack
hasn't checked in yet. Yeah, okay. Well, I like to take a look periodically. I'm sort of getting into my habit pattern. If anybody wants to get a message to us instantly during the show, and this is why, you know, we don't get a lot of folks typing in, simply because most of our listeners are in the vast majority are still on the podcast. which is too bad because, you know, granted, we're around the world and it's awkward times to try and listen to the show live. But if you're in the United States, you know, you can at least catch, even if you're on the West Coast, you can catch part of it live, you know, and then catch it like an hour or two in the podcast right afterwards. But live chat's open. So you just, you know, look at the bottom of the page and then you sign up, I think, at the top of the page, you know, that you have in your browser to allow you to listen to Action Radio. And that'll get us, you know, if you want to disagree, it's probably the easiest way to do it. It's interesting. People call when they agree and they type in when they disagree. It's really quite fascinating.
I do have a comment about Pfizer, and I don't know if this is true, but I was reading something the other day, and they said that Bill Gates is heavily involved with Pfizer. Now, I don't know if that's true or not.
They're all invested.
They're all invested.
Bill Gates has been involved. In fact, he said there's an article several years ago. I've got it somewhere in my vast files. But in fact, you can look it up. He said that the return on vaccine investing is 20-1. So for every dollar he invests in vaccine or in pharmacies that do vaccines, he makes $20 back. So it's a huge profit making device. This is all about profits. You know, and
right.
Dr. Shiva explained it very well, the trend in medicine over the last 20 years has been individual care. The messenger RNA vaccine was developed to specifically tailor a genetic code to an individual. Well, there's no profit in doing that, you know, mass profit. You know, there actually is, but they don't want to take the time. They'd rather have a one-size-fits-all vaccine. That's why the same vaccine they want to give a two-day-old baby to a 98-year-old senior citizen. And say, well, you know, they're the same vaccine, it'll work. You know, the same vaccine they give to a 300-pound professional wrestler, they would give to, a 98-pound, marathon runner. Huh? Wait a minute. You know, so, and the same dose. You notice the dose doesn't change with body size, as far as I know. It's the same, it's the same amount. So this one size fits all. You know, it's like if we all had to wear the same, you know, size clothes. Well, a certain amount of people would be okay, you know, and either end would be, it wouldn't work, you know, so it's a very strange world we live in. So the question comes back to fight or escape. And I think the things with hospital, you can't fight them from inside the hospital. Once you're inside the hospital, they've got you. They have seized your body, which is unconstitutional under the Fourth Amendment. Okay. So the best thing to do is fight it from the outside. Now, from the outside, then you can start fighting it, which means we have to cut their budgets. We have to take their hospitals away. We have to, if they're engaged in death centers, if they're firing people, you know, because of a bogus mandate. We have a situation in Santa Rosa here, and when David Jones joins us at the top of the next hour, you know, they're looking at telling the county to basically kick them off, you know, Santa Rosa County land if they're going to keep firing all the decent medical staff for some stupid mandate. So it's kind of interesting. Anyway, I want to take just a quick break here at this point, and then I want to come back to the Merrick Garland memo, the actual memo that he wrote that's causing all the problems. And so let's play a couple things, and I shall be right back to you. And here we go. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can be trusted as much as personal recommendations from family and friends. You can increase foot and website traffic. You can do all this, all without paying Google, Facebook, or Instagram one red cent. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com.
That's besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. besmallbusiness.com. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
Dangerously cool.
All right, we're back, and it's been a fascinating morning so far. We've got Gene, excellent comments. I'm really interested in what you have to say about the hospitals. There's just a lot of stuff going on, but I want to get away from our favorite topic of the last almost 2 years now. It'll be 2 years in March it was January when the stuff broke. So that's what's happening now. I'm looking for, where do you put it? Oh, here it is. Here we go. So much on my screen, it's crazy. All right, so the Attorney General of the Praetorian Guard, the secret police, the enforcement arm of the Biden insurrection and coup, made a memo October 4th, 2021. And it says here, Office of the Attorney General, Washington, D.C., 20530, in beautiful, script writing, Department of Justice with an eagle and the shield and the arrows and the whole bit. It looks very official. Memorandum for Director, Federal Bureau of Investigation, Director, Executive Office for U.S. Attorneys, Assistant Attorney General, Criminal Division, United States Attorneys. So U.S. attorneys are under the Department of Justice. In fact, when Clinton took office, the first thing he did was fire all of Bush the Elder's attorneys, U.S. attorneys. They're all fired. Okay. So if you want to know how to stack an administration in your favor, do what Bill Clinton did. Fire everybody. This is the one thing Trump did not do. So when Trump comes back, probably in 2024, the first thing he needs to do is fire everybody that in any way was associated with the Biden insurrection, the Obama, questionable presidency, and anybody else hanging on. I would just fire everybody over 30. Just get rid of them. Start over. There's too many problems in government. Okay. In fact, the conservatives, they get in, they serve, and they leave. So the people that you want in government have already left. So it says here, it's from Attorney General, subject, partnership. Isn't that friendly? Partnership among federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial law enforcement to address threats against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff. So that's you folks. All you people have been speaking up at school board meetings, because you saw what your kids were learning in those little Zoom things and internet stuff when they closed the schools for no reason, because of the great bogus COVID hoax. Now COVID's a real disease. I'm not saying that was a hoax. What I'm saying the hoax was the reaction to it, the government policies that resulted from it, the lockdowns, masks, et cetera, school closings. All right. So he says, and this is a very fairly short memo. It's amazing how powerful, things can be when they're and they don't have to be long. He says, in recent months, there has been a disturbing spike in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff who participate in the vital work of running our nation's public schools. While spirited debate about policy matters is protected under our Constitution, that protection does not extend to threats of violence or efforts to intimidate individuals based on their views. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Gene, but isn't, part of our energetic, enthusiastic debate saying if you don't, represent the parents that elected you, we're going to kick you off the school board? Isn't that part of, and that's not a threat, but I think it would be intimidating for people to realize that they could be off the school board because they screwed up. And I don't think that's a problem. That's just the first of many questions I have on this. Gene, you want to react or otherwise I shall continue on.
No, you're exactly right. The thing is, before when people were elected to the school board, it's interesting how they had certain things they were running on. But mm-hmm. now it seems like so many of them, doesn't matter, that's all put that, you know, on the wayside, mm-hmm. because all that matters is, you know, the agendas of what's going on today. And not mm-hmm. that they went in there with those agendas. I just think, you know, it's for some people, once you get into power, which even school boards, you have power. Once mm-hmm. you get that little bit of power, you want more. And so you're going to do what you can to keep that power,
mm-hmm.
regardless yep. if it's right for the students or not. And I know people no longer on school boards, but used to, and they mm-hmm. did it for the best interest of the child. But what's going on now, and I think even not allowing parents, guardians to speak up, that is part of the problem too, because regardless if we don't want to hear what the other person has to say, if a parent has comes in, makes the effort to show up and has something to say, let them say it. You don't know. They may be for your cause or against it, but they have that right. And I give them kudos for speaking up for their child. They're trying to speak up and do the best thing for their child.
Mm-hmm. Let me read you the next sentence. I think you're going to find this rather amusing. He says, threats against public servants are not only illegal, they run counter to our nation's core values. Now, where was Merrick Garland when Senator Sinema was being chased into a restroom, chased into a stall, locked in there with an illegal alien criminal harassing her, making a video of her harassment and broadcasting it on national TV and social media? Just a thought, a little hypocrisy there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And what are our nation's core values? See, here's how you can tell a Marxist. Marxists always talk in terms of values, and one of the benefits of having a Marxist education at the University of Massachusetts Economics Department is the fact that we study Marx quite carefully. Now, at least the professors that also taught in Yale, that sort of did Yale and University of Massachusetts, at least they were decent Marxists in the sense that you had to prove your Marxism. In other words, it wasn't enough to agree with them, to suck up to them to get a good grade. You had to actually be a true believer or a critic. And they didn't mind if you're a critic. Actually, I got fairly high grades, even though I was a critic of their Marxist stuff. But it was a fascinating insight into how Marxists think. And they put everything in terms of values. So in other words, work doesn't have a monetary compensation. It has a value. So the value of your time, the value of your labor, the value, what you have to do to, replicate yourself the next day. These are all Marxist terms, and when they talk about, how much time you have to spend and quality of life and all this other stuff. I mean, it's fascinating. Basically capitalists is going to take dollars and cents and say, well, your work is worth this much to the company, and we're going to pay you this much, which is under what you're making for the company. Otherwise, there's no reason to hire you. And the Marxists would say, well, wait a minute, you're not getting your full value. or their values are that, you're part of the equipment as opposed to, everything else. Anyway, so whenever you hear values, it's like when Pelosi said the other day, the $5 trillion they want to incur in debt above, the current debt ceiling, the $5 trillion they want to add to it. She says, it's not about the dollars, it's about the values. All right? Marxism, right there. Marxism. It's about their ideals, about their ideology. It's about their goals, their feel-good. It's about their utopia. It's about things that can never be, although they don't know it. But every time you hear the word values. So when he talks about our nation's core values are freedom, independence, and the rights of the individual and private property. Those are the nation's core values. But that's not what this guy's talking about. He then goes on to say, those who dedicate their time and energy to ensuring that our children receive a proper education in a safe environment deserve to be able to do their work without fear for their safety. Well, I got news for you. The people who are, who dedicate their time and energy to ensuring their children receive a proper education are their parents, okay, in a safe environment. Yeah, safe from what? When I talk about a safe environment for kids in schools, I'm talking about free from critical race theory, free from indoctrination, free from, exclusion of religion, free from all the things that that these people want to that are excluding from kids, free from, drag queen story time, free from, sex manuals, for fifth graders or whatever stupid stuff they're doing. That's the kind of freedom I want. And they're not talking about that. So when they say free for their safety, I think, the code word safety means don't talk to me, don't touch me, don't criticize me. Bureaucrats should be free. There's what they're talking about. Bureaucrat safety means the ability to do anything they want, and the parents have absolutely no impact. That's what I think he's talking about. Although he's not saying it, but they're using safety. Safety is always the boogeyman. We have to do this for safety. You need the vaccine for safety. Well, who's safety? Not safety at all. But okay. So the reason they're using this is to ensure the Marxism, critical race theory, the indoctrination, the separation of people by skin color, and the enforced, you know, government ideological segregation that's going on in these schools. That's what they mean by safety, the safety to protect that which should not be protected. Deep breath. Let me continue on. The department takes these incidents seriously and is committed to using its authority and resources to discourage these threats, identify them when they occur, and prosecute them when appropriate. In the coming days, the department will announce a series of measures designed to address the rise in criminal conduct directed towards school personnel. Gene? What the hell is he talking about?
What he's talking about is he wants to silence the parents, because if a parent goes in and says something to contradict a teacher or a school board official, right away, oh, boom, he's got to get out of here. She's got to get out of here. They want to get rid of the moms that have been, what are they called now?
Mama bears.
Mama bears, yes. And how sad is that? I am happy people are looking after their children.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will ask the question again. Fight or escape? My conclusion is escape. I want to end all government education. All of it. There's no reason for it at all. And I think the worst thing we can have in our nation is a government education, because the elites, we'll get into Exeter Academy. Probably, and we'll see how long David Jones wants to talk to us. But we're going to definitely open this up to a brand new thing. In fact, Gene, I got Pianki in the line. I want to talk to him for a minute, and you're of course welcome to. But if you could do a quick internet search, see if you can find any country that is completely educated by a private school system. If you can take a look and see if you can find me one, or a country that has minimal government education or majority private education. I would just be curious. And when we find out who it is, I think we'll know a lot more about that question. But after a long absence, after touring the world, after being, scouring the world for whatever you're looking for, he's back. Hey, Pianki, where you been, dude? What's been going on?
Oh, I've just been listening.
Okay.
Hey, and that time talk. What's necessary for parents to have the power, as we talked about before, is to recall these school board members. And I'm going to tell you a reason why. You can have an agenticized concern that would run a slate of school board members. And every member in that slate is going along with whatever the agenda is for this particular concern. It may be contracts, or it may be books or whatever. And many times they will win, because the people, in their laziness, it's easier for them to be handed a slip of names and they will follow through and vote for them rather than doing the research and also having their own agenda and having school board members elected to carry out. So what you have now is board members that's going completely awry. They're not paying any attention to other parents. What parents should do is start pulling their kids out of these school districts. If you have about 500 parents pull their kids out of these school districts and have their own alternative education, whether it's home or group or in a church, then it'll start affecting. But more importantly, a state legislature should make sure that every school district, the parents have the right to recall these school board members.
Okay. I got a question for you. Why do we even have school boards when we have an education system that has principals, vice principals, teachers, you know, competent people? Parents can respond to teachers and a principal much more easily. Why do we even need school boards?
Well, usually those teachers are a member of a union.
Okay, but why do we need school boards?
Well, you have to have school boards in order to govern the activities of the business of the school district.
Well, why do we have school districts? Why can't schools operate independently? You know, why would you need a school official higher than a principal in a town? Maybe in cities you want to unite them, you know, under unified school districts that they have in California. But why do we need school boards?
Well, you have to, even in private schools, for instance, charter schools, Charter schools have a board which consists of whatever the members.
Charters are government schools. They're not private.
The charter schools are government schools, but even private schools have a board. Because you have to have somebody in order to direct the business and activities.
That's like a corporation.
And it should be based on what the parents want when it comes down to curriculum.
Yeah. But that's – oh, siren going by. But that's like a
– yeah, something's going on outside.
It happens. That's okay.
It's coming after you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I'll be next. I'll be first. If all of a sudden I'm not there one day, that's when you got to start wondering, okay? So I wanted to welcome the members of the FBI and the secret police to Action Radio. Feel free to comment. Why don't you call in like everybody else does? Or go on live chat. Pick some cool name like FBI Spook or something like that. Can I say that, by the way, Pianki? It used to mean a secret agent. No derogatory intention. But here's the problem, though, the bureaucracy, these school boards, the administrative levels. You know, do we need a state board of education when the county boards could probably do it? Do we certainly don't need a federal department of education. I mean, that was just a gift to the teachers unions from President Carter. You know, so the higher up the bureaucracy goes, the worse it gets, and the more, you know, more bureaucratic schools become. The reason private schools, they don't have layers and layers of bureaucracy all the way up to the federal government. There's no private Department of Education for private schools. You know, they run themselves. And any board that they have, any it is getting busy out there. Gene, what's going on?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Is Antifa or Black Lives Matter meeting in your school somewhere or meeting outside your door? Sounds like. Sorry. But the point is that, private schools are corporations. And so it makes sense they would have an advisory board or like a board of directors like most major corporations have. So that makes perfect sense. But even so, you can pull your kid out of private school.
You know,
but
when you're talking about a public school district in a major city, for instance, like a St. Louis or Chicago,
right,
there's still state regulations that they have to abide by. And they have to have a superintendent because you may have a district that have over 100,000 students
yeah.
and probably 60, 70, 80 schools, different principals. So, yeah, you got to – that's necessary to have that superintendent that basically leads of that school district. But the parents should have ultimate input on the direction that their children are being educated. That's why you have different buildings that follow different themes. You may have a building that's a culinary arts. You may have one that's a liberal arts. You may have one that's a trade and a job avocation. So that should be based on what the parents want.
Yeah, should be. Well, it should be based on, it's also based on what the taxpayers want. And here's something interesting, too. There's a lot of people that don't have kids that are paying education taxes that their family will never use because they don't have kids in the government school system. And yet they pay taxes on this. Should not they have a voice as well?
Absolutely, they sure should.
Yeah, and given that education is a societal gain, this is what they always tell us. The liberals tell us, well, we need a good education system because it's good for society. All right, that's why the Supreme Court had that bogus Plyler v. Doe decision, saying, well, we have to train, illegal aliens, for to be responsible adults. No, we don't, because they're not going to be here as adults. They're going to go home, and then they can come back as adults when they apply to come in here legally. So that stuff is just crazy. All right, let me get to the next little paragraph here. The department, that being the Justice Department, takes these incidents seriously. I'm talking about threats against public servants, all right, which are not only illegal, they were counter to our core values. And, of course, where were they with Senator Sinema, and where were they with any of the conservative or even moderate? See, Democrats eat their own. The left will, if you think you can snuggle up to the left, if you're a moderate by being a leftist, it's not going to work. They're going after, they go after their own far worse. They know conservatives don't like them, but they figure they have an easier time converting someone like, Senator Sinema. Her and Joe Manchin, those are the two Democrats that are the only two Democrats worth anything right now. But the idea that, if they really took those incidents seriously, they would have arrested Maxine Waters. For openly, encouraging, inciting violence against anybody that disagrees with her. You've got to push back on them. You got to form a crowd. It's your duty to, she actually made a threat. Right, she should be arrested right there. I mean, if the Justice Department, were doing what they're supposed to do, it'd be interesting if they did that under Trump. in the next term and arrested Maxine Waters. Well, look, I mean, Merrick Garland established the principle threats against public servants are not only illegal, they run counter to our values. Well, let's enforce that. Okay.
Well,
so any threat against any public official, you know, and that would be Trump, which happens all the time, you know, in the form of an impeachment, if nothing else, bogus impeachment. But I mean, how many threats have been against Trump?
And
Gene.
Really, Max, if you look, yeah, lots, but what I'm going to get at is Maxine Waters. She's just not once or twice said threatening things. And I mean, mm-hmm. not even threatening, but encouraging violence. And nothing is ever done to her.
How about that? She's protected. She's a liberal.
She is,
and she's
but
black.
There's no excuse for that. When you hear some of the stuff she encouraged people to do, I mean, that is insane. Just so insane. But you did bring up Joe Manchin. And wasn't he fishing or out on a boat this weekend and people came up to him? He had the same, well, not as bad as Kyrsten Sinema, but it's like he people went after him too. Why? Because they think they're conscious.
Yeah.
But I
well,
think
Maxine
the reason
Waters.
Is because they went against the Democratic playbook. You don't, if you're a Democrat or say you're a Democrat, you don't vote against what the Democrats say. And I applaud both those guys for not falling into the Democratic trap.
Well, we've seen that with the one guy in Georgia, Vernon somebody, I can't think of his
Vernon
name.
Vernon Jones.
You've seen that with
Vernon
the,
Jones.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've seen that with the black state legislature who used hydrocortisone and said that Trump said saved his life. Maxine Waters has the privilege, the black privilege supremacy. And she's allowed to say those things with no repercussions. Look how Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the former Los Angeles Lakers basketball star, he said that players that don't take the vaccine, the company, team should fire them. Players that don't take the vaccine, the team should fire them. And he gets no repercussions. But when Trump says players that don't stand for the national anthem should be fired, well, he gets called racist and every other thing. It just goes to show you the double standards that's going on.
Oh, yeah. It's fascinating. Now, I don't know much about what's going on with the basketball players. I'm not a really big sports fan. But Gene or Pianchi, if you know what's happening, are these younger, newer players? Because it seems to me the younger folks, not the millennials. Millennials have basically been co-op Marxists. I don't have much hope for them. But the folks coming along behind them are fairly conservative, fairly religious, and seem to be getting back to what America's core values really are, not what Merrick Garland, you know, who believes in Marxist core values, is talking about. But, Pianchi, Gene, do you have any insight to what's happening at the NBA right now?
Pianchi,
go ahead.
Of course, you know the NBA is majority black, probably 75%, maybe nearly 80%. And you had a couple of basketball players that was refusing to get vaccinated. LeBron James came out and said, which is a turnabout, said it's basically sort of basically their choice was what they want to.
Oh,
but as I said before, a retired former Los Angeles Lakers player, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jabbar said that the team should fire him. And he gets no repercussions like Trump did when he said that any NFL player, National Football League, which is majority black, if those members is kneeling in favor of Black Lives Matter, that they should stand for the national anthem. If not, then the team should fire him. What he's called a racist. Nobody's calling Kareem Abdul-Jabbar a racist, and they both did the same thing.
You know, we hear about the black community, such a wonderful term, you know, is vaccine hesitant. And they're saying it's either racist because black people aren't getting the jab, or that because of the history of medical experiments done on black people, like the Tuskegee experiment, not to be confused with the Tuskegee Airmen. Don't get confused, folks. It's easy to do. But that's the reason for the black population isn't getting the vaccine, which is not a vaccine. It's basically COVID. The reason I think is because there's just a greater suspicion. You know, among Black Americans, about government
in general.
Yeah,
same thing about whites, too.
Okay.
The same thing can say about whites and their reluctancy to become vaccinated, because you have white patients that mm-hmm. was experimented on back in the early 30s. You
yeah.
had white
I don't
patients
think aware of that,
that was given.
Yeah.
You had white patients that was given malaria in order to treat syphilis.
Does malaria treat syphilis? Is that even a connection? I mean, that doesn't make any sense to
well,
me.
Well, it's sort of like a thermal treatment where, you get malaria, your body's going to develop a fever, and under the auspices that the fever would kill the syphilis. But it did happen. Nobody talks about it. You only talk about the things that you
did
can
that
add to rest the further thought.
Did that work exactly? I'm just curious. Or is that just a bogus theory? Is it like electroshock therapy, which, hey, listen, let's put thousands of volts to this person's brain. That ought to cure them. I'm like, why?
I know.
Well,
and,
you know
and if you ever saw anybody
down,
had it done, you would never
hold
agree
on.
To something like that.
Pianki finished his thought. Then when Gene's comment on electroshock therapy. Pianki?
Well, you know, whether it worked or not, the thing is this, is that these experiments was done on white patients. But when mm-hmm. it comes time to talk about those type of things, they only talk about the things that was done to blacks, because you can ride that horse the furthest, especially
yep.
when it favors what you're trying to get done. And that's what
yeah.
you're trying to do. Everything gets to be called a racist. When you call things racist, white folks stop in their track. They're paralyzed.
Not me. I'm one brave white guy, and I don't care what people say. If I did, I wouldn't be doing this show. Gene, electroshock therapy. A little digression,
no,
but this should be interesting.
Say, because I worked in a place where they did it, and mm-hmm. Young people, early 20s having it done, people
mm-hmm.
all ages, but I'll never forget when they're done. Some of them never did get part of their memory back. I didn't ever saw it work that well. I know some of the doctors that worked there swore by it, but I'm like, what you're doing to them? I just did not see the benefit of it, the positive benefit of it, but they just kept doing it, and it's like just tragic.
So a form of execution in a slightly milder form is supposed to cure mental illness. Can somebody make that connection for me? I'm
yeah.
sorry, but I just don't see it. Yeah. Okay, let me finish this. I got David Jones on the line from Santa Rosa Volunteers. So the last little bit of the memo, this bogus, this disgusting memo from Merrick Garland, thank Mitch McConnell. And I don't like Mitch McConnell for a lot of things, but one of the things he did extremely well was he kept Merrick Garland off the Supreme Court by saying, wait a minute, we've got an election coming up. We can't put this person in right now. I mean, he's a real street fighter when he wants to be. He just picked the wrong battles. But this battle he did very well on. Can you imagine this Marxist totalitarian, goon, Praetorian general for the Biden insurrection, if he was actually on the Supreme Court? I mean, the ones we have are bad enough, the Three Stooges, Coney Barrett, frat boy Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch, are bad enough. But if we had Merrick Garland on the court, it would have been disgusting. All right, David, I'm going to get to you in just a second. I want to finish this last little bit here. It says coordination. This is the attorney. This is Garland's memo to the Department of Justice and the FBI of how they're going to arrest parents for, being parents. He says, coordination and partnership with local law enforcement is critical to implementing these measures for the benefit of our nation's nearly 14,000 public school districts. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the federal government has no authority nor the ability to partner with local law enforcement at all anyway. That's not their job. Local law enforcement is by definition local, especially the county sheriffs that are constitutional officers independently voted on. So the idea that the Department of Justice is going to intimidate or coerce or, give incentives like military surplus equipment that didn't go to the Taliban to these local school districts, and it's Taliban, not Taliban, as Biden says, Taliban, all right? He's going to do that and coerce these local school districts, local law enforcement, is so blatantly unconstitutional, I can't tell you. I hear Pianki. Did you want to say something?
You're absolutely right. The local communities gets that authorization to have mm-hmm. power over their police departments through
yep.
the state constitutions.
Mm-hmm. This is not a national police force, which is why we have to immediately abolish the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is certainly not, unless you want to keep their investigative part. I mean, just their investigative. And I thought of that, too. I talked to Matt Gaetz about that when he used to call the show 2 years ago, about the idea of splitting the FBI into investigation and enforcement and then disbanding the enforcement section because we have no provision in the Constitution for a national police force. And now you know why. Look at this crap that they're doing. So Garland says, to this end, I am directing the Federal Bureau of Investigation, working with each United States attorney to convene meetings. Oh, that's going to be fun. Are they going to bring pizza? With federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial leaders. Well, that's pretty much everybody. In each federal judicial district within 30 days of the issuance of these, of this memorandum. Correct me if I'm wrong, too, but memorandums aren't orders. You know, he can't just unilaterally make decrees like this. Oh, I forgot. We're in a coup. Then he says these meetings will facilitate the discussion of strategies for addressing threats against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff, and will open dedicated lines of communication. Oh, really? For threat reporting, assessment, and response. In other words, they're going to track you. If you speak at a school board meeting, you are going to be tracked. The federal government's going to have a file on you. They're going to watch every move you make. And if they don't track you through your vaccine passport, they're going to trace you at the school meetings. All those videos that we watch, those wonderful videos, those parents doing what they're doing, I guarantee you those are going to be with the FBI. And all those people are going to be tracked as subversives, as dissidents, as potential members of the next gulag. This is how this stuff starts. And this is why we have to put an end to it. Jackie Jean, one more last sentence, then I'll get to Dave. I want to get his reaction to this whole thing, too. So I'm having him listen for a minute.
No, I don't have any further comment on this.
Okay, so, yeah, I love when you both speak once. It's so funny. Bianchi. Bianchi?
It is true that the federal government has the jurisdiction over Indian tribes, not the states. Indian tribes have been listed as sovereign under the United States Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The state, for instance, don't have any, you know, if a member of an Indian tribe does something like traffic violation or something like that, or the state don't come down and bother them. They're turned over to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is the federal government. So they're on that accord.
Yeah. Well, by tribal council, I'm a full Native American member of the Santa Rosa Creek tribe. So that would be me now. So interesting. And the last line says,
you pull your card out, they call somebody else to tend to you. Just same way. Same word was with the illegal immigrants. Local police would not enforce on illegal immigrants. They called federal officials.
Oh, wait a minute. Funny you should say that. We just happen to have a bill that does enforce on illegal aliens with a very local law enforcement procedure called civil asset forfeiture. And the last sentence is, the department is steadfast in its commitment to protect all people in the United States from violence, threats of violence, and other forms of intimidation and harassment. And that's why the Justice Department is enforcing, you know, vaccine mandates, mask mandates, and all the things they say they're not going to do. That's my last word on that. All right. Let's get to bringing David. I'll give him a round of applause. Yeah, dude. So David and I have kind of become lobbying, you know, partners, you know, brothers in arms here to try and create the free county in the country and lead by example for everybody else. And one of the ways we're doing that is with our illegal alien free zone, where, in other words, we make it impossible for illegal aliens to live here. It's the exact opposite of a sanctuary city or county in that case. And, of course, other stuff's going on in Santa Rosa Hospital and everything like that. So let's turn it over to David Jones, co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers, and one of the chief sponsor of Action Radio, and let's find out what's going on. Good morning, David. What do you think so far of Attorney General Garland, Praetorian General, you know, Garland's enforcement?
Yes, we're going to enforce this. Yes, the school board will be protected, and the people, yeah, it's another situation, yeah. But just following orders, it's okay. Forget Nuremberg. Yeah, here we go.
Sorry. David, good morning.
Good morning, Dave. Yeah, it's just like everything else that's going on. They don't have the authority to do what they're doing under the Constitution. So anytime that you acquire something that didn't originally belong to you, you have to steal it from somebody else or they have to give it to you. So in this country, we've got parts of it that are voluntarily giving up these rights and voluntarily giving these powers, at least by implied consent.
Right.
And we got parts of the country that these powers are being stolen because they're actively working against giving up these authorities and rights. So we're in that category, and these rights are being stolen from us.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. We have to steal them back, and that's a big part of what Action Radio is all about, is writing the laws that would give us the ability to take our rights back, and we're going to have to take them back. And the way we're going to do that is with, you know, millions of people, you know, screaming and yelling and basing their vote on citizen legislation as opposed to handed down special interest, you know, government, bureaucratic, big pharma, industrial complex legislation. This is why I'm doing this. And so if we can start to have an effect at the local level and the state level and counties, you know, counties across the country start creating illegal alien-free zones, that's part of the movement. That's part of stealing this back. Part of, you know, a big part of this is when parents are going on the school boards. Now, the reaction from Praetorian General Garland that they want to start arresting and tracking and, you know, working with local law enforcement on people who simply attend school board meetings and speak out against the Marxist CRT and the other stuff is a great indication that what we're doing is working. Obviously, it's a threat, right. And they feel so threatened that they're immediately setting up their Praetorian Guard, their unconstitutional, you know, national police, the secret police force known as the FBI, to start going after parents for simply being parents. When did that become a crime?
March 13th, 2020.
I think it's March 15th. The 15 days to slow the spread. Yeah. Fascinating. So we've got a couple folks here. Actually, I don't know if you've met Pianki before. Pianki's one of our regular callers, bill writer, citizen legislator, and all-around great dude. So he's on the line, too. So I'm sure he'll address you at some point with some of the things that are happening. So tell me. I'm curious. I got a bunch of issues. We got a rally next Tuesday with some preeminent doctors coming to Pensacola Blue Wahoo Stadium. We've got Santa Rosa Hospital. We've got our bill. And anything else that's on your mind? Feel free. What's going on?
So I'm not exactly sure who organized that deal at the Blue Wahoo Stadium. We've picked it up and run with it because it's absolutely an amazing event. I'm trying to get as many people there as I can possibly get there. Just to hear the truth about the vaccines and the virus and what's actually going on. The other thing with our bill and anything else that we're trying to get passed, I've ran into a pattern with politicians, and it's all
do tell
that I've met, including let's our governor.
It. Yeah.
So they do these resolutions. Now all of a sudden, resolutions is the government's favorite thing, at least here locally. And you know, they do Second Amendment resolutions. Oh, we're a Second Amendment sanctuary, but what does that mean? What do you do when you sign this resolution? After they sign it, they take a picture. They do absolutely nothing. Same thing with the governor. So the governor says, you know, oh, well, we're going to protect the people against vaccine mandates, and there's going to be $5,000 fines for anybody that we see violating this order. And then he takes some pictures and has a press conference and does absolutely nothing to protect the people of the state.
Yeah, we still got vaccine mandates. We're working. Both of us are working with groups that are trying to stop that. In fact, we're going to hear more about the rally tomorrow. So if you get a chance to listen or catch the podcast, Jane Addams, who does the Medical Freedom Report, starting at 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern, is going to be talking a lot about this rally next Tuesday because she's involved with it. My goal, because we've got Dr. Peter McCullough, and I've forgotten the name of the other gentleman, one of the great doctors in this country that are fighting for early treatment and against, you know, COVID madness. I'm hoping to get them our legislation. I'm hoping to get them the two bills, the most preeminent bill, actually the three of them, that includes Section 230 censorship. But our bill to, you know, put full vaccine liability back on the manufacturers, and the bill I wrote with Dr. Zelenko, you know, to reform the FDA emergency use authorization procedure so that Congress can be involved and the president can be involved. If they pass my bill, which I wrote back in August of a year ago with Dr. Zelenko, then Trump could have declared hydroxychloroquine as under the EUA, and we would have stopped the pandemic in about, I don't know, 3 weeks, a month maybe. But that's how powerful citizen legislation can be. It wasn't because, you know, obviously, even though I wrote to Dr. Scott Atlas, I tried everything I could. Dr. Zelenko, he worked with it. You know, we tried to get our bill out there. It's still there. It's still a viable bill. It still needs to be passed. But the thing is, you know, these things can have amazing impact, but they've got to get out there. They've got to be there. But so if I can get to Dr. Peter McCullough and he starts talking about these bills, you know, in his Rumble videos, we are going to take a quantum leap in awareness and ability to influence, you know, literally millions of people, you know, as people go, oh, that's all that we have to do? I mean, we just have to pass this thing that says vaccine manufacturers shall be liable instead of vaccine manufacturers shall not be liable? I basically took out the word not. You know, that's mostly what my bill does. I just removed the word not, N-O-T, not. Three letters, one word, is you take that out, and all of a sudden vaccine manufacturers are fully liable for their products. The solutions are easy. implementing them is hard. But the solutions themselves are actually, you know, strikingly easy. Anyway, I digress. Back to you, sir.
Absolutely right. And just like our illegal alien bill, we saw this problem weeks before anybody else did, like months or so. So we're lobbying. The problem at the southern border. We see the problem in Afghanistan. And the county commissioners are all on board. Then the governor basically issues the exact same memorandum that our bill says. So if people in Florida are found trafficking illegals into our country or our state, I'd love for Florida to be a country, but then they're going to have their buses.
Wait, hold on. That's kind of an interesting thought right there. We may have to talk about that, or at least declaring the panhandle as a separate state. That might be something interesting, too. We're big enough.
But the governor says, oh, well, we're going to seize all the assets used in this crime. Well, that's a novel concept. We thought about that a few months ago.
Yes,
but
we did.
The governor signs it in a memo, a resolution that's got no teeth. So there again, he signs it. He stands up there. He sounds like a hero, takes some pictures, and then does absolutely nothing beyond that point.
So what was the context of that? What was the context of that? Because I mean, I've heard about it, I don't know exactly. Was it in relation to illegal aliens? What was the memo? I need, you know, and if you can send me something or post it to Arise Patriots, that would help too. What exactly was he talking about there, please?
He was referring specifically to the so-called refugees coming out of Afghanistan, but the general idea was all illegal aliens. And there were supposedly the companies and these charitable organizations that were distributing these people throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And he basically did a press conference saying, if that happens in Florida, we're going to take all your stuff.
I can look into that. I want to see
all these charitable organizations that have tax exempt status.
Yeah.
When that tax exempt is coming up for renewal, there is a period of time where the public can either give expression of yay or nay. And that's what needs to be done. It needs to put a lot of pressure on the tax exempt status.
Okay, all right, hold that thought for just a second, because what I want to do, I want to refer to our bill, because, you know, our bill does have asset forfeiture, and it is a local procedure. It does not involve the state. It does not involve the federal government. There's no rounding up of people in our bill. There's no, we don't yank the kids out of school. We just go after their parents' houses, you know, their property. And so we make it impossible for illegal aliens to live here. But there's nothing, you know, that involves, you know, any greater entity, because asset forfeiture is a local procedure. It's used against crack houses and drug, you know, bought cars and all that kind of stuff. So there's no federal involvement at all. But the idea of tax exempt, we had a show last week on Catholic charities, Lutheran charities, Baptist charities, all these different religions that are making $1.2 billion a year of our tax dollars to resettle illegal aliens illegally in our country. Okay. So that was done. In fact, David, I want to talk to you about this, is should we incorporate something of these illegal operations, these charities, not the churches themselves, Catholic Church, Baptist Church, Lutheran Church, you guys do what you do best. Go ahead, knock yourselves out and don't succumb to mask mandates and closures. All right. But what can we do about these separate entities, these allegedly religious based entities? Should we include asset forfeiture? Should we remove tax exempt status? Should we do both? I think we might have to
you
add a clause.
You should do both.
Okay.
You should do both. Yeah. You should seize any money that these tax-exempt organizations receive that goes toward the importing of illegals and helping illegals to get established. Well, that likewise money should be seized from them. And then, you know, we've seen the seizure of airplanes, boats, yachts. They are auctioned off, and the money is gone for whatever reason they want, charitable causes or the operation of the agency or whatever. Well, yes,
funny
that's what
you should
needs
say
to be
that.
Done.
Now, hold on a second. You're onto something there. That's one of the key provisions of our bill. David, would you like to elaborate, or shall I?
No, go ahead. I've got a second point I want to make when you're done.
Okay. Well, the provision of our bill is that the assets seized by illegal aliens are sold and the money is returned to the citizens of Santa Rosa County. So nobody profits from this. We take the money from illegal aliens and give it back to the taxpayers that had to pay for the illegal aliens. That to me makes perfect sense. Nobody makes any money off this. It's basically a reparations program for illegal aliens, if you want to look at it that way. Bianchi? He's thinking.
You're absolutely right. Give it
or
back to
coffee.
The taxpayers.
Okay.
The taxpayers' funds was use it in order to bring them into the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is. I'm curious how the Fed's going to react to this, because we're not involving the federal government at all. There's no ICE involvement. There's no Customs and Border Protection. There's no Homeland Security. None of those folks are in this bill. It's a purely local measure, administered by the county sheriff and the local police department. That's it. This is the beauty of this. And the other thing is, to the point that David was making earlier, that a resolution has absolutely no impact whatsoever. And passing a resolution is like, you know, blowing, you know, hot air into a strong wind. It has absolutely no effect. nothing. You know, raking leaves in a high wind. You're not going to get
money. That money can be used for 2 years of community college.
It could be used for all kinds of things. It's basically, I don't want to direct the money. I want to basically, you know, find a, you know, hopefully the commissioners will come up with a good formula to you know, give it back to the people, you know, as a, as like I say, reparations for the crime of illegal aliens. But the resolution, David, I don't know I don't know if you're aware of this, but when the great Second Amendment sanctuary city county resolution movement swept across Florida, I think about a year ago, I wrote a real bill that was not a resolution, that had real teeth to it. I'm going to send it to you, but we have a bill, and the whole point and the thing about our bill here is one of the key clauses of our illegal alien free zone bill is that it's an ordinance. It is not a resolution. It can't be a resolution. If they try and do that, we're not going to support it. Instead, you know, you're taking away our bill. You're canceling it, and which means we have to, you know, get commissioners who are going to support it. Hopefully.
So if a private individual were to partake in these activities, if you or I or both of us decided to get in a van and go to Mexico or get in a plane and go to another country, load as many as we could back and try to make a little bit of money and bring them back into the country, we would go to jail. We wouldn't just get our van or our airplane impounded. It's a mm-hmm. criminal offense to go to jail. These people who are doing this were threatening them with seizing their assets, and I agree with that, and it mm-hmm. definitely needs to be proposed. But they are free to go round up more money and buy new vans and new airplanes and go do it again. same thing with these people violating the governor's orders with vaccine mandates. Oh, well, we take a $5,000 fine. Well, when there's only one person or 12 people speaking out or 20 people speaking out against this, they pay, you know, $100,000 in fines. That's not a big impact to a company that's making billions of dollars of profit every year. These people are violating the law. Why is it when a private citizen violates the law, there's jail time and their freedoms are taken away? And when a corporation or a government body violates the law, they get slapped on the hand and some of the money that they stole from somebody else gets taken from them. I get more and more aggressive on this front because every day they become more and more aggressive with their violations of people's individual liberties.
Mm-hmm. Well, it goes to the point you made earlier that we need to steal our rights back. They are seizing our rights. They have stolen our government in a coup. They are mandating, a dictatorship through mandates, you know, and other coercive and, extortion means. You know, the only way we're going to survive this is to literally take it back. I mean, Arizona is trying to do that with their audit, but the Attorney General has to do something. But I think on the local level and the state level and national level, we can have huge impact, and we can start with local. But again, if we get those bills to the doctors and they pick up and they endorse them. So this is the latest thing I'm trying to do is get endorsements. We're also sending out a press release on the budget, you know, and why everybody's lying about it. You know, so we're going to start to do press releases too. So there are things happening at Action Radio. I can't tell you how fast we are advancing. because of folks like David, you know, and Santa Rosa Volunteers. It's just, it's incredible what's going on here. And so I'm really excited. I couldn't do any of it without all of you. So thank you. And this is going to be a very exciting time for us. Yeah. Bianchi?
Anyone that is aiding and abetting these type of operations, they should be subject to fine and penalties also. And also the confiscation of their assets that was used in the aiding and abetting.
Yeah.
And then,
why
would it be a nice thing to take those assets and help the homeless, to help children to go to a two-year community college,
mm-hmm.
to help feed the poor? That's taking
well, see, I don't
want to
earmark. I don't
want to
earmark the money. Yeah, I don't want to earmark the money because I think that two reasons. It usurps the legislative function. That's their job, to work budgets. That's why we elect people to do that. So I don't want to get in the way of that, and I don't want to channel this away from the people to make the decisions over the money that they lost. It's their money. It's not the government's money to do programs with. It's the people's money who had it confiscated illegally and unconstitutionally to pay for people who are not allowed to be here. So I wanted to go right back, but we do have.
It would be the people deciding one of the three things that I just made mention, or it could be more.
Well, they could donate themselves.
Have to stop right there.
They could take their reparation money from the illegal aliens, and I use that word purposely, and they could donate to any charity they want. They could donate to the homeless. They could donate to any particular thing they wanted to. Hopefully not Catholic Charities. the other organizations. But,
reparation is about the repair. And if illegal aliens are coming into the country and they're causing the citizens to have to expend their own taxpayer, well, that is a damage that is done by their presence here illegally and seizing their assets is about reparation or the repair of the damage that they caused.
Well, that's good to know because I was thinking of just poking, tweaking the Marxist nose by using the same word that they use when they want money for slavery, which happened a long time ago, and you can't make reparations for anybody who's a victim of slavery because they've long since passed away. But there is a clause in our bill, the Illegal Alien Free Zone Act, that would seize companies that employ illegal aliens. So we've got that covered. We just don't have covered these charities that are government-funded with our money that actually are in the resettlement. Because once those folks cross the border, and here's the thing, too, the media's not covering this. I mean, they're really not. They're not. I saw a video of a bus going by, but that was a private video. That's a citizen journalist. But no major media stories do I actually see an expose on these religious affiliated organizations, NGOs, non-government organizations that are being funded by us to resettle people that have no right to be here. So it's our turn to do it. we'll see what we can do, but. Point being, we need to have some clause. David, what's your instinct on that as far as adding another clause to our bill, either to remove tax-exempt status from allegedly religious organizations that are acting illegally or seize their property and assets? Not the church. I want to seize the part of the assets that would be the cars, buses, facilities, bank accounts. I can't do bank accounts. I think that's state. But seizing whatever the county can seize of property, of organizations within our county that are engaged in the basic smuggling of illegal aliens and forcing them on the rest of us. Where do you think we should go with that?
Anything and everything within our power we should use. If they own a building in our county, we need to take it. I would go so far as to we can't use RICO because that's a federal deal, but essentially that's what we're dealing with is a RICO case with all these charitable organizations, because especially the Catholic Church, our Catholic churches here locally certainly aren't the ones pulling the strings. They're taking orders from more authoritative Catholic churches and ultimately the Vatican, I would assume, judging by
the
what
Vatican, yeah. Do we have an archdiocese here anywhere nearby? Is there a Catholic governing board?
Nice.
Or is that Tallahassee, maybe? We'll look into that. I want to talk to you off the air about how we actually write this, but I just wanted to get your opinion on, where we should go. I think Bianchi's right, though. Both tax-exempt and asset forfeiture, I think, are going to be necessary. Bianchi, go ahead.
You had down on the border with these Haitians. You had politicians, especially black ones, go down there and encourage and cheering on the illegal activity that they were engaging in. Mm-hmm. You had politicians that was trying to stop the CBP, the Customs and Border Patrol agents, from doing their job, like making reference that they can't use horses no more. Well, if they are hampering the prevention of illegal aliens coming into the country, then they should be fined. They should have the possibility of their assets being frozen also. You know, illegal aliens come in, they're going to receive free medical. They're going to go to your public schools, but I haven't ever paid a dime into the operations of the public schools. That is putting a strain on the taxpayer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, believe me. See, part of the bill, like I say, we don't go after the kids because we don't want to go after kids. It's not their fault. It's their parents' fault for bringing them here illegally. Now, of course, when those kids become adults at the age of 18, then it's their fault. And every DACA, everybody that was brought here by their parents illegally, I don't blame them when they're kids, but the minute they turn 18, they are now adults and they are subject to being illegal aliens here, you know, because every day they wake up and say, I'm going to stay in this country illegally. You know, not like anybody forces them to do it. So
well,
that's definitely a
kids
a thing,
should be placed back with their relatives in the country that they came from. Who mm-hmm. knows better for a child than their own relatives? Not
yeah.
new strangers where they are presently, but back mm-hmm. at their home country where they came from.
Yep, with their first language and their culture and all the things their parents taught them, you know, when they were babies and all the way through. And the simple fact is, I think most of these DACA people have made several trips back to their home countries over the course of their lifetime. So they say that they only know the United States. I think that's total BS. I think that's completely wrong. Anyway, we need to and this is going to be a separate show. We have to start working on this, of asset forfeiture of those who are threatening some of our officials. You know, if the Department of Justice is so intent on going after threats against public officials, why aren't they going against threats against the Border Patrol? You know, why aren't they going against people that are doing their job in government? You know, they're talking about these school boards. Obviously, we know this is a directed, this is a political witch hunt. This is trying to make political decisions on the parents. But the hypocrisy of not covering, you know, the Border Patrol, the folks that are going after them in assaults, in threatening their safety and security, and who knows what's going to happen to Border Patrol agents individually. It's like when Eric Holder, Attorney General, and Obama, you know, sold guns that were let go to Mexican cartels and arms dealers, and Brian Terry ended up, Border Patrol agent, got murdered with a gun from a U.S. gun shop that the Obama administration let go simply so they could prove that American gun owners were really violent. Well, it wasn't American gun owners that killed Brian Terry. It was Mexican cartels. It just makes me mad. That's why I have to take action. Yeah. Okay. David, anything else on your mind? Santa Rosa Hospital or let's see how big. Oh, I guess we covered the rally. Anything else on the rally? I know we're going to cover that tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, we've got the rally at the Blue Wahoos. We do the protest at Avalon and 90 every Friday. Protest
okay.
on North Avenue in front of Sacred Heart every Saturday. We actually missed a city council meeting last night, and the mayor took the wonderful opportunity that no opposition was there and decided to speak in a negative manner on my wife and other people that were fired from the hospital. So
what?
Now we get to address that.
Okay.
But other than that, we're working on our bill, working on the vaccine mandates. The county commissioners have pretty much ghosted us. We know that the CEO is lying to the politicians, and they're pretty much taking his word at face value. They're not doing any investigative work. So I don't know if there's more than just conversations there or what, but now county commissioners that have been very conservative, very helpful for the last 2 years, are now no longer even taking my phone calls or returning an email. So we got a big problem there that we got to address.
Yeah. Oh, this is politics as usual. You know, say one thing, do something else. So I've got calls into one of our county commissioners. I'll keep his name out for a bit, but I'm working on that. And let's see if I can get a meeting. If not, that's going to tell me a lot. That means we have to go public. That means we have to make a public campaign, you know, out of this as soon as possible. And that's why the press releases are starting and some of the other things that we'll be doing. Okay. Now, did you see your wife was working for Santa Rosa Hospital? I thought I heard
she
you about
was.
That.
Yeah,
oh,
she,
do you want,
she was fine. She was fired for not taking the vaccine.
Okay. If she wants to come on the show, it'd be great. I mean, I'd love to hear her story, but I don't want to, you know, if she doesn't want to, she's already been fired, you know, but yeah. And this is what's happening, you know, and any moves to take that property or deny the lease or something that you were talking about earlier with the county commission, are they moving in that direction or no?
What was the plan? So the plan was their lease was up. The county was also in control of COVID relief money that was supposed to go to the hospital that we could use as leverage. It was we had an action plan in place. We were going to have a conversation. We were going to work towards a middle ground with the hospital to try to come up with a resolution before we had to use all of those things. But that meeting never happened, and now it's being refused. So really, at this point, all these people are criminals, and they need to go to jail. And it's not going to happen inside of the normal channel. So where do we go from here? We have the constitutional ability to abolish and reform the government. Do we start
better people,
private prisons, and sending these people to jail ourselves? Or
I think you need to start your campaign for county commissioner.
Ooh,
how's that? I'm serious.
Well, you know, sometimes he's more affected on the outside than the inside.
Well, that's my job. I'm not going to run for office ever. I know what I'm supposed to do, and my specialty is writing bills and getting Action Radio going. That's my job. You know, David, you'd be a hell of a county commissioner. Just a thought.
Yeah.
And you know another thing too.
Hold on, Fianchi.
I haven't asked
David about this before. In fact, I just thought of it on the show this morning. That's a possibility. But on the other hand, you may want to stay outside too, like I am. And many times you can be more effective outside, because once you're inside, you've got to fundraise, you've got to glad hand, you've got to, you know, smile, kiss babies, and do all that BS that's involved in keeping the office. That's the problem. That's why it's so much easier to be here outside, because we can say what we want. We're free. And I would never want to lose that freedom by being restricted and having my job based on votes, as opposed to being able to do what my conscience dictates that I do and build Action Radio on the outside.
I'm not going to take anything off the table. Okay. I'm willing to do anything necessary to correct our situation. I do agree that I'm very effective outside of the politics. And if I ever got into politics, it would be, first, protecting the Constitution, and second, carrying the will of the people. So votes and staying in office and none of that means anything to me. So I wouldn't be restricted there, but not something that I want to do or I am interested in. But I'm not going to take any weapon off the table. If it can be used to correct our situation, then so be
it. Yeah. And then I got the other project I talked to you about earlier, and I'm talking about that off the air, but we have so many things in the works. You guys have no idea what's coming. It's going to be great. All right, David, if you don't have anything else, if you don't want to come back and chat with us next week, that's fabulous, all the stuff you're working on right now. And we'll talk. Yeah, go ahead. Fianchi, you want to talk? Yeah, go ahead.
You know, one other thing, too, about these organizations that's got tax-exempt status. Any individual company, corporation to donate to a tax-exempt company, which is helping them to commit an illegal act, well, then they should be subject to asset forfeiture, because the money that they donated in aiding and abetting is tax-deductible. So that amount that they save on their taxes should be forfeited.
Yeah, I'm just writing some stuff down. My problem is that the federal government, which gives money to these tax-exempt Catholic charities, Lutheran charities, Baptist charities, to resettle illegal aliens in our town cities and our neighborhoods and put their kids in our schools, the federal government would say that's legal because they're doing it. They would say, well, we're doing it, so it must be legal, which, of course, is BS.
Yeah, but
and
their
funding
tax
it,
deduction,
you know,
fits
so,
into their state taxes also.
Okay, so now you're talking. Okay, so now that makes more sense. That, you know, so any company that's contributing to, let's call it resettlement. I'm just writing a bunch of notes down here for myself. Resettlement. Yeah, we got
to
look into that.
Contributing to, they're aiding and abetting the illegal act.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, this you've opened up all kinds of new possibilities, and I really appreciate it. David, I'm going to let you go. unless you have anything further you want to comment on. But I want to thank you for joining us this morning. And, I'll give you the last word.
Yep, that's it. Greg, I appreciate it. We'll keep working towards making Santa Rosa County the freest in the country.
You know, we should get a resolution or an ordinance. Or we should actually make that the official motto of our state, of our county. Can we do that? What do you think? What is the motto of Santa Rosa County? Do we have one?
I have no idea.
Well, let's find out. Navarre has, the most relaxing place in America or something stupid. I forgot whatever they call themselves, down there in the beach as part of our county. Yeah. We should, the freest county in America. I kind of like that. It's got a ring to it. All right, David. Thank you, sir. David of Santa Rosa Volunteers. Do you want to give website information, email real quick before you go? And then we'll do some other stuff. Oh, he's gone already. Okay. Santa Rosa Volunteers is at SRV1776.com, SRV1776.com, and I believe the website is SRV1776@protonmail.com. There we go. Pianchi?
You know one thing about the education.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government gets its powers how? Through the state.
Yes.
It's the states that give the federal government its power.
Mm-hmm.
You give the federal government its power because congressmen and senators come from the state.
Mm-hmm.
People have to understand and take back the power that they have in controlling that central government that's called the federal government of the United States.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that means putting the senators back in the Senate, the state legislature's hands to put in the Senate. And people forget, and this is why the word democracy is so dangerous. They think that everything has to be majority rule and all power comes from the people. Well, the problem is that people vote for slavery and bondage every time over individual rights and private property, because people don't want private property. They want your property. And as long as you have human nature wanting your property and not private property, you have to actually impose freedom on people. And so the reason for a republic, we can use all the lofty terms we want, but the simple dirty little secret is that in order for us to be free, we have to make y'all free too. Okay. And the way we make you free is that we have a republic which basically imposes freedom with an electoral college, with the state legislatures appointing the senators, with every state having two senators, so all the states are equal regardless of size and population. These are measures to ensure our freedom that are not democratic, but they are a republican form of government, which were guaranteed in Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. That's one of the provisions. Failing to have a Republican government is grounds for removal of that government. And so the Biden insurrection could be removed on those grounds alone. And I would impeach him on those grounds. They're not a Republican form of government. They're a coup d'etat dictatorship. All right. So there's all kinds of things we can do with it. All right. I'm going to take a break for a bit. I'm going to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers on the piece I was going to play yesterday. I'm working on the new one. And the new one's interesting. It's by Alexander Hamilton. And so he's taken over from John Jay. John Jay was incompetent. I mean, he wrote three really disgusting papers that were easy to criticize. Alexander Hamilton is using the same bogus arguments, which makes him harder to criticize. But nonetheless, it's still interesting. So let me play this, and then we'll get started. We're going to talk about Phillips Exeter Academy. I want to show you how the other half lives, how the other half goes to school, and how they create the elitist leadership snobs that think that they are empowered with running the country and telling all the rest of us what to do. And they don't have mask mandates in the school, okay? They don't have quarantines. They don't have, they may have. I'll take a look and see if they have vaccine requirements, on some of the other things. But for the most part, it's a totally different world, folks. It's a world that we absolutely deserve to be in. So let me play this for you back in a few minutes.
I'd also like to talk about the elitist people in government that are all talk and no action.
Oh, yeah. No, feel free. Now, we're going to spend the next, most of the next, the hour plus. On this topic, and feel free to talk about different things, and away you go. So Gene, if you ever have a point that I'm rambling too much, let me play the tone here. You haven't used this yet much. Where's my hotel bell? I want to use it more. See, that's what it's for. It's a gentle reminder. That's like Gene calling room service. I'm here. So I never want to take you for granted. All right, let me get back to where to my piece here on Anti-Federalist number 5, and then tomorrow I'll have for you Federalist number 6, and we'll continue our journey through the Federalist Papers. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV1776.com. That's SRV
1776.com. The pompous, arrogant, elitist John Jay, who wrote Federalist Paper No. 5, has such complete contempt for the American people that he obviously wants to rule over the people for their own good with his strong national constitution. However, the rebuttal in Anti-Federalist No. 5 is just the opposite. It is simple, short, honest, straightforward, takes John Jay's writing head on, and makes complete hash of John Jay's weak propaganda. Anti-Federalist No. 5 was written and signed by an anonymous author known only as An Observer. Whoever it is appeals to my sense of logic and reason to take on the elitist and powerful through quiet ridicule, where you are making total fun of them, but it's not so obviously apparent to them. This is probably the easiest of my discussions of any founding document, because all I have to do is mention some select quotes to show you how An Observer turns John Jay's writing into mush. John Jay began Federalist No. 5 with the claim that the union of Scotland and England should be the model of our states, and that a letter from Queen Anne to the Scotch Parliament would be the convincing evidence. An Observer writes, "It is a certainty that when the union was the subject of debate in the Scottish legislature, some of their most sensible and disinterested nobles, as well as commoners, who were not corrupted by English gold, violently opposed the union and predicted that the people of Scotland would, in fact, derive no advantages from a consolidation of government with England, but on the contrary, they would bear a great proportion of her debt and furnish large bodies of men to assist in her wars with France, with whom, before the union, Scotland was at all times on terms of the most cordial amity." It appears quite clear that the union envisioned by John Jay is based on force and subjugation. No wonder John Jay became our first Supreme Court Chief Justice. The elites were already moving in shortly after the ratification of the Constitution. An Observer further observes, "It deserves also to be remembered that the people of Scotland, in the late war between France and Great Britain, petitioned to have arms and ammunition supplied them by their general government for their defense, alleging that they were incapable of defending themselves and their property from an invasion unless they were assisted by government. It is a truth that their petitions were disregarded, and reasons were assigned that it would be dangerous to entrust them with the means of defense, as they would then have it in their power to break the Union." This definitely portends a future U.S. where the government would have all the arms and the people defenseless, all in order that the national government remain in power. In describing this absurd example in Federalist No. 5, An Observer states, "From this representation of the situation of Scotland, surely no one can draw any conclusion that this country would derive happiness or security from a government which would, in reality, give the people but the mere name of being free." The last paragraph of Anti-Federalist No. 5 is so good, there is no explanation that is needed, so let me close with this from An Observer. "I observe that the writer above mentioned takes great pains to show the disadvantages which would result from 3 or 4 distinct confederacies of these states. I must confess that I have not seen, in any of the pieces published against the proposed Constitution, anything which gives the most distant idea that their writers are in favor of such governments. But it is clear these objections arise from a consolidation not affording security for the liberties of their country, and from hence it must evidently appear that the design of Publius, in artfully holding up to public view the bugbear of such confederacies, can be with no other intention than willfully to deceive his fellow citizens." Publius is what John Jay called himself in the Federalist Papers. Going on, "I am confident it must be, and that it is, the sincere wish of every true friend to the United States, that there should be a confederated national government, but that it should be one which would have a control over national and external matters only and not interfere with the internal regulations and police of the different states in the Union. Such a government, while it would give us respectability abroad, would not encroach upon or subvert our liberties at home. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from foundingfathersquotes.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Cool. I just love that. I'm gonna make more of those. I think I'm gonna make one saying Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. Gene, what do you think?
Good. Yeah. And just so you know, I did look up to see countries that weren't run by, you know, governments and schools in that regard. And it seems like, and I have to continue to dig, but I think that seems like that's the biggest, the government is the biggest payer source of any school almost in any country, because it seems like we as a people rely on the government for the schools, which is kind of ironic. It's like you think that we should rely on the people themselves versus the government, because that way we have more of a say of what's involved. But
well, you figure all our founding fathers, the people that wrote the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation. I saw an abbreviation for Articles of Confederation as AOC, and I almost fell off my chair laughing. That's just, they didn't know that. It was an earlier article. But that's just kind of funny. But all our founders were homeschooled. I mean, parents used to teach their kids on the farms. They didn't send them to school in the 1700s. You know, so you compare the homeschool presidents, Washington, Jefferson, Adams, you know, with the with the public school or the current, you know, presidents, you know, the insurrectionist Biden. Trump went to private school. But you look at the Bushes and, you know, some of the other folks and, you know, you can't compare the last 10 presidents with the first 10. I mean, there's no contest. I mean, it's just staggering. One of the biggest differences is homeschool versus, you know, government or government subsidized, except for those elite. Well, maybe the Bushes. Well, I think that the Bushes are different. I think they went to one of these private academies we're going to get into in this hour, which I think is gonna be just, we're just going to have some fun here. And I've got other articles, too, if we get bored talking about it. But let's just see how far it goes. And, of course, anybody wants to join us, 215-383-3832. Do you have a thought before I get started, Gene? Because I feel a rant coming on.
No, but go talk about what you're going to say, and then I just want to get the people, the listeners, to call in about some of these people in office that I'm just starting to think that, well, not starting to think, I believe that they're just in it for themselves. They're all talk, no action. They just like to be in the limelight.
Yeah, and we got the live chat open, too. If anybody wants to type in a message, feel free. And that way you're anonymous. We don't know who you are, and, you know, you can be as, you know, as controversial as you want. If you're as obnoxious as you think you could be, that's going to be another story. But, I mean, be controversial, but personal attacks, we're just going to ignore you. All right, so here's the thing. So I'm reading Merrick Garland's, manifesto against parents, while at the same time allowing for the harassment, imprisonment, the political imprisonment of people that the government disagrees with. And so the fact that they have a double standard, it would be surprising if they didn't. That's the first thing. But the second thing is I got to wondering, okay, well, you know, where are the leaders going to school? Where are the leaders of our society? The elites, the people that think they know better than us, you know, all the folks that are in the Obama administration, Biden insurrection, those folks that go to the right schools, and they go to the right prep schools, and they go to the right universities, and they meet the people that are going to serve with them in leadership positions for the rest of their lives. And where do they learn that their version of society is good and that they can rule over us? You know, where do they go? Well, they don't go to your local public school, I guarantee you. They just don't. you know, the, I think Sidwell Friends, the Quaker school in I'm shuffling my microphone, I'm sorry, in Washington, D.C., that all the president, all the Democrat presidents send their kids to, you know, especially those that are, it's kind of interesting that they send the kids to a Quaker school while, you know, running a war at the same time. Call me crazy. I just find that a little hypocritical. All right. So I got to wondering, private schools, what are the best prep schools in the country? So I found this article, America's Best Prep Schools. It's pretty easy, right? So it's www.besteducationdegrees.com/prep-schools/. Want that again? besteducationdegrees.com/prep-schools. And so that's where you find America's Best Prep Schools. And so I want to know where the people that go to Harvard and Yale go before they go to Harvard and Yale. And so what is it, what are they doing in their schools that we're not doing in ours? You know, do they have mask mandates, quarantines, you know, things like that? And of course they don't. So it starts out, it's kind of interesting. It starts off with a brief timeline of public, of private schools, you know, right? Goes back to 143 BC. This is, anybody wants to follow along with it, that's why I gave you the website. And it's a Shendu Shitsu Shishi, Shendu Shishi High School is established in China, 140 BC. So 143 years before Jesus, China had a private school, which is kind of interesting. 597 AD, the King School, Canterbury, the oldest private school in the world, and it's still operating. If anybody's been to Canterbury, of course, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Canterbury Cathedral, I went there. It is staggering gorgeous. I mean, this place is, I liked it, I think, better than Westminster Abbey. And there's nothing wrong with Westminster Abbey. I mean, that's where Princess Diana was married, you know, to the jerk. I love Princess Diana. I'm sorry. She was just gorgeous and wonderful and special. But anyway, so I still have my connections to Britain and Canada and Australia and New Zealand, being a British Commonwealth-born Canadian. I should say Commonwealth-born. I should say British Commonwealth because we're kind of independent. But being a Canadian by birth, you know, I still have a connection with England, Australia, Canada. Canada, Australia because I live there. England because I've been there a bunch of times. And New Zealand because I spent a whole day there. I need to go back. Anyway, so Canterbury is just a gorgeous place. 1500s. Here's another one. 1500s, the Spanish Catholic missions opened schools in Florida and Louisiana. 1500s. Let me try that again. 1500s, Spanish Catholic missions opened schools in Florida and Louisiana. Now, one of the greatest sources of public of private education in this country are Catholic schools. And the reason the Catholic schools did this, I understand, is because they didn't want the government telling them how to educate their kids. Okay, so now am I in favor of everything the Catholic schools teach? No, but that's not my decision. That's the decision of Catholic parents or other parents that want the kids to get a great education. If they want a Catholic education, you know what you're getting. You know, you've all seen the Blues Brothers, right? You know, you've all seen the Penguin, you know, the nun with the wooden stick there. I have news for you. I was caned as a child in Australia. I was hit with a 3-foot bamboo rod. Several times, in fact, you know, for various indiscretions before I learned that, oh, they're serious about this. Okay, fine. Fortunately, I had a very high pain tolerance, so it didn't affect me as some kids got really upset. But anyway, so, you know, so that's my experience. So I understand that kind of stuff. Anyway, so Catholic schools, I don't know if they still do that. I don't think so, being, you know, politically correct and all that. But we've had missions since the 1500s. 1628, continuing on this timeline. Collegiate School of New York is founded, now the oldest active private school in the United States. 1628. Okay. This is like 150 years before the Declaration of Independence. We had a school in New York and it's still operating. Okay. So this is how old education is. In fact, I should drag it out again. It's been hacked and destroyed, but I wrote an article. It's like a 14,000 word article on education, a new model for education. I'm going to get it, redo it. I'm going to put it in our blog. Because I'm going to set up Greg's blog, and Greg's blog is going to be on writeyourlaws.com, so we'll get that going as well. But I'll be able to put all the articles that have been hacked from this wonderful source, Intellectual Conservative, and put them there. I always keep the rough draft. So 1850s, upper-class private academies, number 6,000 in the United States. Let me say that again. In the 1850s, 10 years before the Civil War, upper-class private academies, note the term upper class, the rich folks, the elites, upper class private, and we're not talking about, you know, Ernie on the farm in Kansas or Dorothy with Toto. We're not talking about that. We're talking about upper class private academies, number 6,000 in the United States. We had a viable private school system in the United States before much of a government education system was even created. And if you ever, National Public Radio and various other things, they did a special on letters, you know, during the Civil War. And what you find out is that kids raised on farms that never went to a public school were amazingly articulate. We're talking about, you know, barefoot poor soldiers that, you know, were stuck in these miserable battles and dying by mini-ball, which is actually mini-ball, M-E-N-E-T, this cone-shaped bullet that was amazingly accurate and deadly during the Civil War, you know, wrote incredibly articulate letters. Well, they didn't learn that in the government schools. In fact, kids today could not write as well as farm kids, you know, from the 1800s that were in the Civil War, simply because those kids were educated at home by educated parents. And the school system here has dumbed down kids to the point where they're basically mentally incompetent. If you look at the kids coming out of school, they have no memory because they can look everything up. It's staggering how the education standards and the memory and the brain standards, just the basic brain operations of kids have so declined. I hear rattling in the background. Gene, did you want to get in on this?
I was just thinking about what you were saying, but no, it's so true. It's interesting to think that where have we come from? I mean, it's like, how did we get it to this point when it was working before?
Mm-hmm. Well, private schools work, so maybe we're asking the wrong question. Maybe we should look back at the 1850s and look into the 6,000 private schools, because the next census is 1879. Private secondary enrollment is 73.3% of the total. So in 1879, almost 75%, almost three-quarters of our kids were enrolled in private schools. And that's Reconstruction. I don't know how long Reconstruction lasts, but I imagine Reconstruction was 10 years after the Civil War, so that'd be 1865 to 1875. So just after Reconstruction, 75% of our kids were educated in private schools. Well, maybe that's a model for the future. So abolishing the government schools is not such a radical idea after all, when we had a time in our country, you know, when 75% of the kids were in private schools anyway. So that's not such an outlandish idea. If you want to do some research, I'm going to bring Pianki. Let's make him live and see if he has a comment so far. So, Gene, if you have a minute, I would check that out. 75% of the kids, you know, privately educated back in 1879. I want to know more about that if you get a chance. Pianki, welcome back.
I heard you mention Sig's Friend School in Washington, D.C.
Sidwell. Yeah, tell me about them.
Well, see, that's the school that, like you say, Democrats send their children. Obama's two daughters went there.
Mm-hmm.
Washington, D.C. had what was called a voucher program that would allow disadvantaged families to be able to send their children to Sig-Well Friends School.
Mm-hmm.
When Obama came elected, they done away with that opportunity. Now, I don't know if it came back or not, but Congress done away with it. Wonder why? Well, I can tell you why.
Yeah,
they didn't want
those
disadvantaged children attending the school with their privileged children. That's what the problem was.
Mm-hmm. So as much as these folks want to emphasize the racial divide, the real division in America is the 99% and the 1%. I mean, this is a real division, and it's economic. It's not what they portrayed it as a way to, you know, tax the rich, because the rich pay most of the taxes anyway. But what it really is a division of the elites versus the masses, the rabble versus the rulers. And you look at the people, the reason that Gavin Newsom went to the French Laundry, one of the most expensive restaurants in the world, in Napa, without a mask, sitting next to all his friends, is because he's one of the elites. He's Nancy Pelosi's nephew. He doesn't have to abide by the rules. He doesn't have to listen to what's going on for the masses. People have to understand, everything that's gone on with the COVID bogus lockdowns is about control. It has nothing to do with the disease, because the disease could have been cured by hydroxychloroquine in a month. You know, it was discovered in January. It could have been wiped out by February. We know this. Okay, give everybody, you know, Peter Navarro had 60 million tablets of hydroxychloroquine ready for distribution in, I think, March. So we could have gotten rid of it in March of 2020 when we first announced that chloroquine kills COVID. But they didn't want to. Why? Because they wanted the control and they wanted the money. But that's the division. These people go to these schools to be the best educated people in America, to have real critical thinking skills, because they actually have, they don't have skills that are for criticizing everything else, which is what critical thinking is for the masses. All right. They have really good thinking skills because they're the natural rulers. All right. It's their job to rule over all of us. And they have to have a great academy to go to learn the things that we regular folks are denied. That's something I'm going to be exploring more and more. And in the interest of equity, why can't I go, if I have more kids? Why can't all schools be like Exeter Academy? It's not just the money.
Well, you're hitting all good points. But let me tell you how this works from my observation. You have these black politicians, like members of the squad, Maxine Waters, Clyburn, and Lewis and Cunnings. He's dead now. Both of those two dead.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to rule over the greater masses, that mean whites, because they don't have the numbers. They're not representing a great enough numbers. But what they do is that you have marginalized people within the districts that they're ruling in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to maintain that rulership because they utilize the practice of taking from others and giving to them in the form of programs that basically go nowhere. So it's a contendum. It's over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
They maintain that certain classification in the population that they rule over because that certain population is uneducated and don't understand that they're being had, they will continue to vote for these people over and over and over again to the points where in some families it creates dynasties.
Oh, yeah. If you're, most people vote the way their parents voted and they're kind of instructed to, unless you have a brain you think for yourself. And if you think for yourself and vote the way your parents want, at least you're thinking. I don't fault you for that, but I fault people for not even considering different options or vote the way the union tells you or the company tells you or voting the way anybody tells you is no way to carry on. I want to explore this divide more because it's really quite fascinating. So the next panel on this website here, again, besteducationdegrees.com, it's talking about the division between private and public schools. Now, bear in mind, let's go back to 1850. Upper class private academy is number 6,000 in the United States. There's only 14,000 school districts in the United States. So there were enough private, and the population in the 1850s was probably maybe 30 million Americans or something like that. So the amount of kids that could be in 6,000 private schools, 75% roughly. This is 73.3. I'm going to say 75. It's an easier number. 1879, private secondary enrollment was 75% of the total. Do you want to know what it was in 2013, Pianchi? 75% of the kids in 1879 went to private schools. What percent went to private schools in 2013, which is the year they have the stats for?
Probably 10%, if that many.
1% go to independent private prep schools. 1%. 9% go to parochial schools. That would be your Catholic schools and things like that. But the academies, the elites, the future rulers, the Supreme Court justices, the senators, the heads of major corporations, the ambassadors, all these different people, the rulers, the elitists, the Bill Gates and all those folks. He got kicked out of Harvard. That's his problem. But what percentage of those folks go to prep schools? 1%. You got 9% parochial.
There's something funny about that.
What's that?
It's something because Congress and everybody else has put pressure on these private schools to help disadvantaged kids. Like, for instance, private institutions on the SAT test spot black children 310 points before they even start taking the test.
Mm-hmm.
They spot Hispanics children, whites get no, and Asians are deducted 140 points from one report that I read.
That's
so this
yeah,
is,
if you get the report, publish it,
on?
Send it to us. Yeah. Oh, I know what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Even though that demographic is able to escape and go into one of these elite institutions, they still stigmatize them and make sure that they don't come out of this where they came from.
Well, it's fascinating.
They won't let them go.
But so rather than getting academically qualified black and Hispanic students into these academies by making the standards equal for everybody, which is what they should be, that's the whole point of standards. Standards are standardized. You don't change standards. Otherwise, they're not standards anymore. Right? So instead of doing that, they recruit 300-point lower SAT scoring blacks and Hispanics to go into these schools, setting them up for failure. So not only are they able to say, look, we're diverse, We've got black students. We've got brown students. Look at us. Aren't we wonderful? And I'm not really crazy about the terms black and brown because I hate limiting people by a simple skin shade. But when you think about it, that's what they're doing. Okay, they say, look at us. We're diverse. We're wonderful. We bring these kids in. Well, how do they bring them in? They have lower academic standards. Well, what happens to those kids when they get in those schools? They fail. So not only do they look good for being diverse, they maintain their elitism by kicking the black and brown students out because they put them in a situation that they cannot handle. Rather than recruiting the best, you know, black and brown students like they would white and Asian students. I despise the word yellow. I won't use it. But when it comes to Hispanic and black students, you know, and be the, you know, there's a prejudice. That elitist prejudice is still there. So unless you're like a Lloyd Austin, affirmative action general, or a Colin Powell, or unless you're a cooperative black elitist, you're not going to get anywhere. You know, if you're an independent black leader like Herman Cain, you know, Larry Elder, yeah, you know, Candace Owens, you know, the Burgess Owens, Vernon Jones, and Herschel Walker, you know, you're in a very different situation. That's,
well, you know, Democrats play with the impression. Like when you have Joe Biden speaking, he have about 15 blacks behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but when Donald Trump speak, he have what's represented in the population of blacks that would support him.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why come it's not as great as it should be, because if I was behind Donald Trump and was picked mm-hmm. up on the camera, well, I stand a chance of being ostracized like Steve Harvey was and like others were that came out and say, I support Donald Trump. We talked about Vernon, the politician in Georgia. We talked about the lady, the female politician at the state level in Michigan who got mm-hmm. ostracized when she made the statement that because of hydrochloroquine, I think I'm pronouncing it wrong, that Donald Trump saved her life.
Yeah. It did save her life.
You follow me?
Is she still a Democrat?
I don't know.
Hmm. You don't hear about her, do you? She got
no,
she
you
got
don't,
canceled.
But you see how all this works. Do you see how this is working?
Yes, we talk about it every day. It's exactly how it's working. But I find it fascinating that we had a 75% private school educated American student body, and now the independent private prep schools have 1%, the parochial schools have 9%, that's your religious schools, Catholic, et cetera, and you have 10% other, and I imagine those are the charter schools, I'm guessing. Public schools, government indoctrination centers are 88%. We were 75% private in the 1850s or 1870s, and now we're 88% public. And you can trace the education level of Americans directly with, I bet you, and here's a question for Gene too. If you can get me a chart that measures the academic standards and the proportion of kids in public schools, and I can almost guarantee you right now you'll see two lines descending at about the same rate. One, or increase, they'll be inversely proportional. So in other words, the rate of the percentage of students in government schools is going to rise and the academic standards are going to lower. So the greater amount of students in government schools, the lower the academic standards over time. I don't know if there's a chart like that. It exists, Gene. If you can find it, it'd be great. But that's my guess as to how this
works.
Well,
anytime that the conversation about school choice and when mm-hmm. poll and survey, blacks and Hispanics, especially blacks, in the 70 percentile say this is what we want, you have organizations like the Usual Suspects, the Teachers mm-hmm. Union, National Education Association, American Federation of Teachers, they come out through their lobbying efforts and work against that. Even the NAACP, I can show you correspondence of me going back and forth with them or me rebutting what they said when uh-huh. you had a state politician by the name of Betty Thomas in the state of Missouri who mm-hmm. introduced a scholarship bill that would allow companies to take on a student and pay their way for a private school only if and they would like to be used as a tax deduction just like everyone else does, like other yeah. entities do. They came out against that.
Well, if you look at you know, most black Democrat leaders when it comes to, you know, creating a better education, better, you know, private housing system from government housing, better transportation, better infrastructure, better school system, especially, which I probably already mentioned, they always come out against it because they don't want that. They want dependency. They want the plantation. You know, it's fascinating that if we were all the same skin color, how would they make their plantation population? Just a thought.
Well, their house would fall down because they don't have anything to build it up. You had Maxine Waters at a hearing said to some other member in the hearing, you don't have the right to tell me, a black woman, what I feel. See, they use these certain slogans, these certain words when it benefits them most, and when it puts such a astonishment on those who's listening to it.
See, now I have a dream. I have a little fantasy that I play out in my head that I'm in diversity class. Okay, I get to go to one of these classes, but I have an employer, you know, this actually, you know, be stupid enough to send me to one, and I get to talk to the diversity teacher, and my first question is, well, wait a minute, if this is diverse, how come we don't have any white instructors? That'd be like the first question out of my mouth, and it would go downhill from there. But I have a dream, I really do. My personal little fantasy is to be somehow put into a diversity class where I can say anything I damn please. I think it'd be an absolute blast. Because I want to take these people to task for what they're doing. They are racists. They are black supremacists, brown supremacists. You know, I should probably start saying Hispanic again. I don't like that. I don't like any of those terms. They all bother me. But these people are supremacists. You know, and they need to be called out as
such. Well, you know, at one time, blacks did form a education system called the Council of Independent Black Institutions. Which they started a lot of private schools, about 75 or 80 across the country. Now it's down to maybe 3.
Well, that's too bad.
But the reason they did it was for rebuttal against quote-unquote white supremacy. But not knowing at the same time, it's actually those black politicians against you doing that.
Yeah.
Whites don't care. It's the black ones.
Yeah. Yeah, because blacks are no threat to white supremacists or white politicians. You know, and black, you know, like I said, it's an interesting cultural divide that goes on, you know, with black citizens in this country. Just this is the way this all works out. It's quite fascinating. I found another stat here. 45 schools were all boys in 2013. 29 schools were all girls of the private schools. They call them gender-specific prep schools. So of those elite prep schools, it was 45 to 29. So the boys had an advantage over the girls, because they had more prep school options, so much for equality. All right.
When they came up with charter schools, one of the pleas against that is that they're taking money from the public schools and giving it to religious schools. Oh, they're taking money from the public schools and giving it to corporations. Nothing, no further from the truth.
Yeah.
It's not truthful. And, you know, I argue with a politician here the other day, Monday, I believe it was. His name is Rodney Hubbard. And we was talking about another instance, and he was talking about Republicans. And I was talking about, you know, people's choice, basically. But he was a Democrat, and he worked on school choice. Matter of fact, his kids go to a private school called CBC, Christian Brother Institute.
Okay.
He don't send his kids to the public schools. And many of those politicians don't send
their
kids,
send their kids to government schools. They never do.
Let me
give you I'm going to see if you can take a guess. And, Gene, if you want to get on this too, I'm sure Gene's looking up stuff. I always have questions that I can't answer. So, you know, this is why Gene's so wonderful. The 5 legendary U.S. prep schools. This is the elite of the elite. You want to take it? Do you know any of these schools? I could have named one of them. And I'll tell you which one when we get through here, as we go through this list. Can you think of any of the most elite prep schools that train our leaders of tomorrow? Do you know any of them? There's 5 of them.
Well, they're probably in Massachusetts.
Close. They're Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and New York. Yeah, yeah. Let me go through a couple here. We're going to go through more of them in a bit. Phillips Exeter Academy, number one. Okay, we're going to talk about that. I've got
Deerfield
their website.
Is another one. I bet
Deerfield Academy?
Is on there.
Yeah, I've heard Deerfield. I've heard
yes.
that. I went to the University of Massachusetts. So I guarantee you Deerfield Academy graduates did not go to the University of Massachusetts. They went to Harvard and Yale and Stanford and University of Chicago.
MIT.
MIT, exactly. Yeah. Phillips Exeter Academy, Exeter, New Hampshire, $1 billion endowment. $1 billion endowment. One more time, folks. $1 billion endowment. Okay? So you want to know who has the money?
And these great schools.
The government spends the money, but the private schools have the money. You want? Let me give you a couple of alumni.
Great schools, by the way.
What's that now? Say it again. I'm sorry.
You're talking about great schools. You're not talking about college. Those are great.
No, these aren't college. No, I'm not talking about prep schools. No, these are high schools. These are high schools.
Oh, well, yeah, high schools. Well, yeah. Yeah, high schools, not colleges, with a $1 billion endowment. This is a high school.
Yep. It might be a junior high, too. I don't know how many grades that. We're going to look into it. We'll find out. But, in fact, thank you for making that point, because I specifically left out colleges. We've talked enough about colleges. See, government schools are required up to the 12th grade. That's why I concentrated on high schools, junior highs, middle schools, things like that. So prep schools are the most elite schools you go to so that your lovely little darlings can go to the most elite private colleges in the country. The best way to get to Harvard and Yale and Stanford and University of Chicago and some
MIT.
Of the other MIT, thank you for reminding me. Boston College, what's that one? Holy Cross, some of those elite schools in New England. The Ivy League. So what's the Ivy League? Dartmouth, Brown, Rutgers, Harvard, Yale. The Ivy League is 12 schools that are in a football league. So the academic league.
Probably Hampton.
Now
Columbia, one of those two.
I think, I don't know if Columbia has a football team. They're all in New York. But 12 schools of the Ivy League. Gene's listening right now. So if you give me the 12 schools of the Ivy League, that'd be kind of cool too. But the way you get to the Ivy League universities is you go to prep schools, because it's college preparatory. Prep stands for preparatory school. These are college preparatory schools. These kids are not going to the local vocational tech team. These are not auto mechanics in training. These are not plumbers, electricians. These are not carpenters in training. These are not tradespeople. These are the rulers of the country, the future ambassadors, governors, presidents, CEOs. These are the elite of the elite. Okay. Now, guess who the first alumni they list for Phillips Exeter Academy is? Just go ahead. Just try. You're gonna die laughing. Are you ready? Should I tell you?
Ooh, Chuck Schumer.
No, Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh.
A Facebook fame? John Irving. I'm not sure who John Irving is, but the other one is Gore Vidal. Famous playwright, critic, brilliant man. But Mark Zuckerberg, went to Phillips Exeter Academy. Phillips Academy Andover, which is the one I know because I lived in Lexington. So Andover Academy, we used to call it Andover Academy. Logo designed by Paul Revere. Alumni, are you ready? George Herbert Walker and W. Bush. So George the Elder and George the Younger. We're alumni of Phillips Academy in Andover. Sam Morse, I'm not sure who he is, Humphrey Bogart went there. George Washington's nephews went to Phillips Academy, Andover, Massachusetts. Next one, Trinity School, New York City, New York, the fifth oldest school in the United States. Alumni, Truman Capote, Ivanka Trump, and Oliver Stone, who did like the Vietnam films, the Kennedy films. Things like that. St. Paul School, Concord, New Hampshire, 1883, site of the first U.S. hockey game. Alumni, John Kerry and William Randolph Hearst. Now, I don't give a damn about John Kerry. Obviously, sending him there was a total waste. But William Randolph Hearst was the one who said, you make the weapons and I'll make the war, or something like that about the Spanish
American
War. Patty
Hearst's
father, exactly. Yeah, Symbionese Liberation Army when they took her and named her Tanya. I remember when they were attacked. It was the night I was doing a junior high performance of HMS Pinafore when I played Sir Joseph Porter, KCB. How's that for out of my past? That's the night that the FBI raided the Symbionese Liberation Army about an hour before I went on stage, at a junior high production of Gilbert and Sullivan. This is my memory associations. Anyway, so William Randolph Hearst, who was the subject of the film Citizen Kane, the Kane Mutiny. That's about William Randolph Hearst. The largest newspaper publisher. You think the media is controlled now? It's actually nowhere near as much as it was controlled then. So William Randolph Hearst is from St. Paul's School. And the last one is Milton Academy, Milton, Massachusetts. Major donor, Stephen King. Okay. Alumni, Robert Francis and Ted Kennedy and T.S. Eliot. So there's your leaders, folks. The five most expensive U.S. prep schools, St. Albans School, Washington, D.C., tuition. Take a guess. Oh, Gene. She's the hotel.
It's over $40,000 a year.
Yeah, it is. Gene, let's get you. I'll
take a breath.
It's that at from preschool. See, you're talking about prep schools to go into high school.
Yeah, well, no, these are
not prep high schools to go into college.
No, these are high schools.
And those
schools,
those are high schools. Well, and some of those schools, you pay $40,000 even at pre-K.
Yeah.
Gene, you rang?
Yeah, I got the easiest question you gave me today answered so far, and that's the 12 Ivy League schools. And I will tell you them, not in any order, but this is according to the site. It's Stanford, MIT, so that's Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Northwestern University, University of Chicago, Brown University, Columbia University,
Cornell,
Dartmouth, Harvard, Princeton, University of Pennsylvania, and Yale.
Okay. Yeah, we actually
guessed
about six of them, I think. What was that, Bianca?
Well, we on a roll today. Guess what?
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 And when you look at your Ivy League schools that has black face student body, usually those are Africans. At Cornell University, the black student body complained to the administration that they were, guess what, admitting too many Africans. I give you the argument.
No, yeah, send it, put it on the Action Radio group. That is hysterical. See, white people don't think of that. When they see black people, they think black. They don't think African or American. So this is why this is good. You know, it's fascinating.
What they're doing,
the
they're using the faces to make up. They're using the faces to say, well, we diverse.
Yeah.
Whereas you have had others question that, saying black means other than the black it was intended to mean.
Yep. Yep, there's black and black.
Think about
black
that,
is
Gene.
Not black. Yeah, Gene, do you have something else?
No, that's it for now.
Okay, here's an easy question. tell us where Maxine Waters went to college. I'd be curious about that, seeing she came up in the topics today.
Well, she went to Mishan High School in St. Louis. I know that.
Oh, that's interesting. I want to tell you what they're learning at Phillips Exeter Academy. St. Albans School, Washington, D.C., tuition $54,151, enrollment 575, endowment $45 million. Woodside Priory, Portola Valley, California, tuition $53,925, enrollment 375, endowment, they're not telling. Idlewild Arts Academy, Idlewild, California. Wait, let me quickly get through this, Gina. You have rang. Anyway, tuition, $53,600, enrollment, $295, endowment, $4.8 million. These schools have a hell of a lot of money. Dana Hall School, Wellesley, Massachusetts, home of Wellesley College, where Hillary Clinton went to school. Tuition, $53,211, enrollment, $475, endowment, $21 million. And lastly, Salisbury School, Salisbury, Connecticut. See, this is all New England, New York, right? Tuition, $50,000. They got the thing about $53,000. I guess that's the going rate right now. Enrollment, $305,000. Endowment, $42.8 million. Back to Gene.
All right. Maxine Waters went to Los Angeles College, and it's now called California State University in Los Angeles.
Is that a public school?
Yeah, I'd assume so.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. See, the thing with your black politicians, that's not their specialty, academics. Their specialty is conniving and tricking people. A lot of them. Not all, but a lot of them.
Political racism, I call it. Using race as a political weapon to disarm and defeat your opponents. Okay, let's go to exeter.edu. www.exeter.edu. If you're following along at home live, or you can do it in a podcast. Yeah, I'm going to start doing this more often. So go to the website. Phillips Exeter Academy at exeter.edu, where it says, begin the journey of your lifetime. The world is waiting. Okay, and I want you to think of the arrogance. Just let the word arrogance kind of resonate in your brain for a while as we go through this. And it says, what can we help you find? Begin the journey of your lifetime. Did you get that in the government schools? No, you don't get that at all. It's like, come on in here, and this is what you'll be doing. They got the sections, the good life returns. Choose your path to excellence. Here we go. So they don't even realize the propaganda they're spewing out. It's kind of funny. They say here, this is Phillips Exeter Academy, the number one prep school in the country. Here, you decide which academic passions to pursue, and Exeter Education will challenge you to be your best self, and here you go, and prepare you for a life of purpose. I think that word purpose is purposely chosen. What do you think for the elitists is a life of purpose? Anyone want to leap in on that one?
Well, you know, Obama mm-hmm. attended Reverend Rice Church, which is a black church where they preach like black nationalism. If you heard some of his sermons that was being telecast or played mm-hmm. during that year when Obama was president. But he went there, I'm saying, to learn the talking points that's coming out of this particular ethnic group.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason learned. He went there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Back to Phillips Academy. They have a section here where every voice matters. Harkness is a student-driven approach to learning. They call it Harkness. I don't know what that means, but that's what they call it. Created here in 1930, its impact transforms lives. Then they have serving others become second nature. Exeter's motto, non sibi, means not for self. These are the words we live by every day. So here they are teaching the elites to be the elites of the world, to be the most self-serving people that ever existed, while their motto, they disillusion themselves with their motto, you know, non sibi, not for self. Tell me hypocrisy isn't their standard. This is ridiculous. There we go. Let's get some more. Exploration leads to discovery. There's no need to define yourself by just one thing. Whether in the lab or studio or on the field, wherever curiosity takes you, we've got you covered. These guys have an incredible academic opportunity here. And I'm looking at all these pictures. And guess what? Not one person's wearing a mask. It's fascinating. Not only that, there's not a section on rules. There's no section on rules here. There's no section on rules, policies, or anything like that. There's no section that has mandates, vaccination requirements, mask mandates, or anything else. There's no section on rules for this school. Again, I was looking
for
what's
not the subjects.
There. Exactly.
That's only for the subjects.
So the reason I'm bringing this up is because my job here, half my job is to report what's going on. The other half of my job is to report what's not going on, what's not being reported. So let's experiment a bit. Let's go to academics. Pursue your interests. So let me show you. Academic opportunity awaits, okay? With access to 450 courses, more than many small colleges. This is a high school with 450 courses. Gene, I hate to bug you again. How many courses in the average government high school? Pick one.
Three. Reading, writing, arithmetic.
Three courses.
I would say maybe 25.
Yeah, you've got a few English, you've got a few math, you've got different grade levels. So say 9th through 12th grade. Let's just take high school. So you've got high school math, which would be algebra through geometry, trig, advanced trig, probably pre-cal, and for the really advanced students, maybe calculus. We have calculus in my high school. Only about 20 kids could take it. But for the most part, I got through advanced algebra, trigonometry. I was really good at trig, useless at algebra. So that'd be that. English would be lit, English comp, right? Would be a typical high school, right? So you got your literature classes where nobody reads the books. You got your comp classes where nobody can write, even though they have had English allegedly their entire time in school, and they come out functional idiots. You got science. You've got, I remember, earth science in 8th grade, biology in 9th grade. 10th grade was chemistry. 11th grade, I don't remember. And 12th grade, I was partying. there's your science. And I think 12th grade, you're repeating various science. I'll tell you a funny science story sometime. History. There is no history. It's called social studies. History has been done away with. There is no history in the government schools, but I guarantee you there's history at Phillips Exeter Academy. Okay? So what else? Gym. And we got some physical education, but that's being done away with, okay? And don't even talk about music, theater, and art. Those barely exist at all.
Been done away with.
But this school has their own symphony, okay? You know, so let's look at departments. Let me just look at the website. I'm not making this stuff up. I mean, I've given you the website. You can check along. You can follow with me. You can report on live chat. Here we go. Departments, art. Cutting-edge technology and innovation are linked to traditional studio processes. Courses in painting, drawing, photography, ceramics, printmaking, design, advanced portfolio, and visual communication. Not bad. Gene and Pianca, you can stop me anytime. I'm just going to go through these because it's fascinating. Classical languages. There's something that's barely taught in government schools. And if they do, it's awful. Classical languages. Well, they don't teach these at all. Experience the joy of reading Greek and Latin authors in the original. Okay, Dead Poets Society just came to mind. You know, where's I can't remember his name. I forgot it. Who's the, you know who I'm talking about? Who's the comedian? Robin Williams. Thank you. Senior moment. You know, this reeks of Dead Poets Society because that's a prep school. All right. So if you want to know what's really going on, look at prep schools, and I bet you they teach that way. I don't know how restricted they are, but it's fascinating. Did they take Latin and Greek? Pianchi, how's your Latin or your Greek for that matter?
Well, they had a couple of charter schools in Kansas City that was Greek and Latin themed, where the children would speak that language all day long during their school day.
Yeah. See, now I had a course by my teacher, Mr. Edwards, who I'm sure has long since passed away. He was brilliant. He was also the one that caned me in Australia. But he taught a course on roots of the English language. And we take Latin and Greek words and talk about how they had been developed in the English language. And I remember some of them, you know, lavo, to wash, and you get laborious and you get lavatory and you get things like that. Manus, the hand, you know, manual, manufacture, things like that. And it was just interesting that you look at these words and you see where they came from. Look at the root words. You know, I think democracy is people something.
The majority of the words that was used in American, the majority of the words that was used in American English is French, Latin, actually. Isn't it funny how me, old man, know these things when they young children don't? It goes
they
to show you the difference in the schooling then.
Yeah.
It goes
well,
the difference
memory.
In the schooling then.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, too. But most of the stuff I learned in
school. And you know the funny thing?
That
you hear what Gene said? You said it's social studies. It's not history. What is social studies? Social studies is George Floyd. Social study is the riots and vandalism that's going on in the community. Social studies is a prelude to a socialist society.
Yep, that's what they did away with history. So you're not permitted to learn the history, be it both good and bad, which history is. History is terrible and history is wonderful. It just depends on the situation. But the reason they did that is because social studies divides America into groups. It's social studies, not individual studies. There are no individuals. It's part of the communist indoctrination. Computer science. Reexamine your views on technology's place in the modern world. Reevaluate the limitations of computers and reorganize your thinking to best combine the creativity of humans with the precision of computers. So these people aren't training you to be a programmer or a data person. They're training you to be, Bill Gates. they're training you to be Steve Jobs. They're training you to actually create the entire computer system. Here's another one. Economics. Is economics even taught in most high schools? Listen to this. Understand the fundamentals of economics in one term, or explore economic theory and models in depth in specifically designed microeconomics and macroeconomics courses. This is high school English. You'll gain self-knowledge and learn to communicate with clarity through thought-provoking discussions of poetry, fiction, drama, and creative nonfiction. Oh, Captain, my Captain. Dead Poets Society comes to mind immediately. Exeter Innovates. Experiment and create. Oh, there's something that's really valued in the government schools. Yeah, I think I'll experiment. Right? Choose from interdisciplinary courses that combine learning at the Harkness table with co-curricular and experimental learning. Ooh. Health and Human Development. Our health education is about empowering you to engage in healthy lifestyles. Yeah, this might get a little touchy-feely. I don't know. This might be a modern addition. You'll learn in a respectful environment to examine your attitudes and develop the skills for healthy decision-making. Something tells me that's health with diversity training. Just a guess. History. See, they have a history department. They have a history department. One more time. They have a history department. They don't have social studies. So social studies is for the masses. History is for the elites. Isn't this fascinating? You'll learn critical reading, analytical writing, and independent thinking skills while expanding your worldview through an exploration of other eras, cultures, and perspectives. Wow.
And it should be American history, too. I had American history and world history.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. But again, most of what I learned on my own. I learned some in school.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I had one course that really taught me how to think. And that was Professor Dean Alfange at the University of Massachusetts. Actually, a couple of Marxists got me to think, too, because I learned how to disagree with them. But Dean Alfange taught, I think his father was in Roosevelt's cabinet somewhere. I'll have to look him up. But he was high up in the Roosevelt government. And he was a liberal, but he was brilliant. And he'd take your exams, your little blue books, and if he didn't like what you wrote, he'd just draw a big red line through it and write hash. You know, in other words, if you're trying to BS him, he knows. All right, he's a really smart guy. But he taught me how to write and how to think, and a few people did too. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing today, because of maybe five courses that I took in my entire educational career. His was one of them.
Well, that's why I come analytical thinking and critical thinking is why I come people don't see that Donald Trump and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar are basically saying the same thing, but one is ridiculed and the other is mute.
Yeah. Yeah. They got Department of Health and Human Development. They've got history. They've got integrated studies. They've got mathematics. Imagine yourself imagine yourself at the board presenting solutions to problems and sharing your results as your classmates ask pertinent questions. Oh, yeah, like that goes on in math class in the government schools. Together, the class learns to read, write, explore, and communicate mathematics with confidence. So I remember the film Good Will Hunting? Do you remember when Matt Damon with Ben Affleck, they actually co-wrote this film and made them both superstars. But there's one scene where Ben Affleck and the other guy. What's his name? I just said it a minute ago. Anyway, my mind's going crazy today. Where he does this.
When you say Affleck, I think of car insurance.
That's Affleck, not Affleck. Ben Affleck and who's the other guy that was in? Matt Damon. There we go. Thank you. So Matt Damon, you know, solves this huge math problem. He's working as a janitor in the school, and he solves this problem that none of the math students can solve. You know, and it's fascinating the way he does it. You know, and so you know the educate and what they really do is poke fun of elitists in education. But that was interesting. Modern languages. Here you go. Modern languages. It's a global world out there. So there's your view. They're globalists, right? As you learn to communicate in another language, you'll expand your knowledge of other cultures, et cetera, et cetera. Music. Here we go. Whether your vibe is classical, jazz, a cappella, rock, African drumming, musical theater, or world music, we've got it. They've got, you know, take classes, private lessons.
You know what else they got too?
What?
Comparative study of religions.
I'm getting to that. You're absolutely right. Listen to this last sentence. Take classes, private lessons, and perform in over 35 ensembles. They've got 35 musical ensembles, where most schools don't even have a music program anymore. Wow. Physical education. Stay healthy and fit with our flexible program. Compete on a team. Enjoy our state-of-the-art fitness room. Yeah, I bet you the gym is great. You know, take courses in Pilates, yoga, and more. We focus on cooperative effort and fair play. Well, that's not very competitive. Do you have competitive sports?
You know what?
Yeah.
You know where lucrative jobs lie? In symphony orchestras. New York Symphony Orchestra, Chicago, St. Louis.
Yeah.
Those are lucrative jobs.
Oh, yeah. But here's the problem, though. I play tuba. Do you know how many tuba players an orchestra has? One. And you want to talk politics? Symphony orchestras. I didn't believe it. There's politics in getting the audition and getting selected, especially when there's only one tuba player. And the parts are too boring. I mean, tuba parts are disgusting.
About French horn?
Oh, those are much more fun. Done. The French horns and the trumpets coming first, and the French horns, and the tuba go, bah, and that's it. Sorry.
Even voices like in Clint Eastwood, ba ba ba, wah wah wah.
Gene's like, what the hell are these guys doing?
Where's yours, Gene? Come on.
Can you imagine if that was the point where you entered the show and you got, wow, wow. Actually, go to the Danish Symphony Orchestra. You want to hear the best rendition of both the James Bond theme.
Oh, yeah, they are beautiful. They are
the James Bond theme and the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly theme, the Danish Symphony Orchestra, they're fabulous.
I listen to them every chance I get.
Oh, they're great. Yeah, yeah. So there's a good symphony orchestra. And they have fun, too. I mean, who else does, wah, wah, wah? And they got a little flute. Doo-doo-doo-doo. Wah, wah, wah. I got to play that theme. I got to find a non-copyright version.
Joe.
Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. I play that on guitar, too. All right. Religion. Discover your best self in relation to others as you ask essential questions. Investigate ethics and morality. Study world religions and contemplate what it means to be human in a changing world. They have a religion department. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you tried to put a religion department in a government school, how many different groups would be breathing down your neck within seconds? And yet they have a department.
Oh, they would.
Yeah.
It would.
Yeah.
And even during the time they taught world history, they only went back to a certain era. They didn't go back 10,000 before the common era. They stopped around 3,500. You know why?
No, tell me.
Because it aligns itself with the Bible, the King James Bible.
That was when the world was created?
That's when they say the world was created.
The 6,000 year ago thing? Yeah.
Historical. It's historical content and evidence and archaeological. Mm-hmm. It goes back beyond, way beyond that.
Oh, yeah. We talked about the 60,000-year history of the Creek tribe. You know, Chieftain Skyhorse. We talk about that stuff all the time. Yeah. So it's
yeah.
And what about the dinosaurs? You know, were they here 150
years,
they don't
million
believe years
ago? In dinosaurs. They don't believe in dinosaurs.
Yeah, never happened. Right. Those bones are faked. Yeah.
Yeah, bones are fake. They didn't come from Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah, watch the bones there. You know, I didn't talk about this too much on the show when both folks were on, but it was kind of like a running joke in my head that first I had Wendy Arthur, who did the, you know, the Christianity report, you know, the Oh My God report, followed immediately by Dan Skyhorse with the Creek Tribe report. Now, I tried having those two converse. It didn't work because their orientations are so different. But that's why I loved having them together, because the contrast. I could talk to both of them, but it was very interesting. And if you ever go back to our old Wednesday shows with Chief Dan and Wendy, just some of them got very interesting. The different perspectives between the two, and Dan rebutting Wendy was quite amazing. And I hope I haven't offended both of them. A couple more departments. We're almost out of time, actually. Only about 10 minutes left. Science. Their science department says, we offer a variety of opportunities to engage with the world around you. In classroom, laboratory, and field, they take field trips. Do they even allow field trips anymore in school?
What?
You learn by you learn science by doing it, by exploring and measuring, and then analyzing and interpreting at the Harkness Center table. And then they have the last one, theater and dance. Find your voice, your movement, yourself. Opportunities for all levels in acting and dance, stagecraft, puppetry, playwriting, speechwriting, and more. Speechwriting. Oh, there you go. There's your politicians. Join one of many clubs to explore further. So those are your departments at Phillips Exeter Academy. There's some point I was going to make. Field trips. Now, when I went to my school, I went to Caulfield Grammar in Australia. Caulfield Grammar was all boys school at that point. It was basically your prep school, same kind of thing. And we had teachers were I think I'm pretty tall. The teachers were masters, and we had a headmaster. And then, like I say, I got caned and was very disciplined. You stood up when the teacher entered the room.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. You did your work. You know, Angus Young of AC/DC is running around in his old British schoolboy uniform, you know, with the jacket and the tie and the shorts and the little cap and the whole bit. He jokes around with that, you know, and you get Pink Floyd. We don't need no education. You know, and they're all in those school uniforms.
Pink Floyd.
I wore one of those school uniforms. I wore one of those in Australia for years. So
I always get in these arguments. Where I was, they was talking about doing away with corporate punishment. And I say, well, I think that should be left up to the parent. But yeah. My statement was one thing. But when they found out and I told them that I'm a black American, oh, baby, it got quiet then.
So let me
see. They're flabbergasted when they hear a black person come out and make reference totally against what they're trying to push, an agenda type.
Well, see, black is not only a color, a method of segregation, it's also a pre-programmed thought process. So, and it's fascinating, we should explore this further, that black is actually a level of obedience to leftism. So your black quotient, the amount of black you are, is dependent on how closely you agree with Marxist, communist, leftist indoctrination, and how much you're with the program of the plantation of segregation and everything else. It's a fascinating phenomenon in this country that black Americans who are not, do not have the quotient of Marxism required, are demonized, ostracized, and hated far more than alleged white supremacists. It's pretty incredible.
Well, if you're not voting for me, you're not black.
Yep. Around here, don't mind me. Yeah, I remember that. You know, and think about that. So what more racist can you get by saying that a black person
isn't black?
Well, because he's leftist. He's one of the good guys. So here you go. Let me just, I'm just going to kind of quickly poke through a few courses here. Let me see how much time I've got. I'm going to slide my,
hey,
about
Greg, someone
left.
Else, yeah. A Bumper Jack's on the chat too, if you just want
oh,
to he's,
oh, let's, oh, oh, let me hold up the academics. You know, we may have covered what I want to cover. Let's go to Bumper Jack. Bumper Jack says, check out some of the stuff said yesterday about COVID and politicians. Several politicians have died of COVID, and there's a long list of those infected on Ballotpedia. Now, does he give us, or she give us, a link that we can go to it? Why no? So we have to see. So give us a link. Bumper Jack, you got 6 minutes left. Give us a link, and we'll copy it. We'll take a look. What did you get your degree in, Greg? I actually have two, economics and environmental studies, with a minor in political
well,
science.
You know,
so I have two and a half.
People are always going to die of something. People are always going to die of something. There ain't nothing new.
Yeah.
But when you have a recovery rate of 98.7%, I wish I had those odds when I go to. Yeah. I wish I had those odds when I went to a bingo.
Yeah.
Went to where?
Bingo, bingo.
Oh, I see. Oh, I said bingo. I wasn't quite sure what you were talking about. Yeah, 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 yeah. So let me ask Bumper Jack, what are your degrees in? So, yeah, I told you mine. I actually have a couple. I have 2.5 degrees. And all I wanted to do was go to aviation college, but that didn't exactly work out. So, yeah, I got a couple of degrees. I'm not stupid. You know, I don't have a law degree yet. I write
laws.
Oh,
you mean
I don't
to
have
tell
a broadcast
me
degree.
It's you white.
Radio show.
You was white that? And you couldn't go to the – you were white and you couldn't go to the school you wanted to?
No.
I didn't know that happened.
I haven't really shared this because it's more personal, but I came from one of those incredibly dysfunctional families. I don't even know if I should share this, but
well,
my parents promised.
You shouldn't.
I was blocked. Maybe I'll tell you someday. But I was actually, my parents prevented me. Well, I will tell you, threatened to lie on the financial aid forms if I didn't go to the school that they made me go to. And I was 17 when I started college, so I didn't have a lot of choice. So yeah, it's kind of a sore spot with me that I was denied. You know, for no reason whatsoever, because I would have paid for it myself, you know, and I would have graduated.
Well, you know,
with
if you had
it,
we probably
that,
wouldn't
yeah.
be talking to you today. You know, faith really has some strange yeah. destinations.
Well, that's the other
sure
that's the other thing, too. And to, you know, if this was God's plan, you know, and I look at the things that I've done in my life and independently, they make no sense. None, you know, because I was a flight instructor for several years, loved it, burned out completely and wrote a book about it. Okay. But I didn't get my airline career. That I want because, you know, for a number of reasons, one of which was, well, actually several reasons, eyesight, the fact that all the airlines went broke and thousands upon thousands of pilots were laid off. And there are other factors I'm not going to go into. But the point was I was blocked from going to aviation school because, you know, my parents promised to lie on the financial aid forms, so I couldn't even pay for my own education. Now, who does that to their kids? One day we're going to talk more about this kind of stuff. Because there are millions of people in this country that come from dysfunctional families that you can either rise above it, as I'm trying to do here, or they're
mm-hmm.
still permanent victims, and they're addicted
right.
to substances,
right.
they're alcoholics, they're depressed, they're constantly in counseling. My option is always fight back. So I fought back as best I could.
I got a better one. I got a better one degree.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
Thank
go
God for slavery. If it hadn't been, I wouldn't be here today talking to you.
Oh, you want to explain that? You got 3 minutes. That's interesting.
Thank God for slavery. I mean, the course of events that go on through history, today one has no control over.
Right.
But they did happen. That led to you to be where you are today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm here because of all kinds of things. And, you know, like I say, when I look at the total, you know, obviously the plan from the big guy was more detailed and took me on a path that I never expected. I thought of Action Radio in 2014. I was on a bike ride, you know, and I was, you know, just having one of these little internal dialogues saying the problem with radio is that it's all talk and no action. I said, instead of talk radio, we need action radio. And that's what started the process. And that's what has led us 7 years later to where we are today. And so the process evolves, the process continues, and so it's a journey that all you folks are you know helping carry the wave, and so the wave keeps growing, the wave gets bigger. I got a picture of a wave on my wall, you know, and so as the wave grows and as we get more involved, the people that come to this are all of a similar independence of a belief in there's a certain optimism. That goes along with this. And there's a certain nonconformity, and there's quite a good level of ADHD as well. But there's a lot of things that bring people to this process that we're involved with changing the relationship of the citizen to the government. And if I had not had the adversity in my life The Canadian psychologist, I've forgotten his name. You know what I'm talking about, the real popular one. Everybody hates. University of Toronto. I'll think of him probably after the show. But he was saying that creative people and people that make changes, you know, usually had severe adversity in their life. So I have to think that the adversity that I faced, adversity for what I consider no reason, you know, cruel and unusual adversity that, I'm not talking physical stuff. I mean, I wasn't poor. I wasn't, you know, homeless. I wasn't, you know, starving. I wasn't, you know, physically abused or anything like that. It was a kind of a weird cruelty that was unnecessary. And I wonder if the struggles that I go through and everybody else goes through, and the more I talk to people, the more I find that the activists have gone through a personal struggle. The more that
they help to shape who you are today. That's the main thing.
Yeah,
your brain is a composition of all past events that your DNA cells experience.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I love all the experiences. I mean, the one I want to repeat right away is flying. So Sunday we'll get Air Force, Action Radio.
That's
one.
Why come people are different. That's why people are different. See, with this COVID, you've been taught to think that everyone is the same, but it's not true. They have a different biological makeup.
So just to tie that in, we've got about 10 seconds left, to tie that in with our topic of education. Education has to be for the individual. And I think the government schools are incapable of doing anything for the individual. On that note, we're out of time. And I got background noise
anyway. Have a good day. Bye.
Thanks, Jean. Thank you for all your help and research. And Pianki, thank you, too. This is a great discussion. And this will be podcast in about 5 minutes. And so it's 9 o'clock Central Time. By about 9:05, you should be able to get the podcast and start over again. Share with your friends, please. This is Greg from Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Jean, do you have a quick comment?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm having a good time. But I'm out of here. Okay. So back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Central Time. And we'll do it then.